listening to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at fan.video.
Good morning. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm excited that you're all with us today. I am Brianna Morello, your host of the program. We've got 3 hours that are going to be jam-packed with nothing but the truth. We've got a lot to uncover, a lot happening within the last few hours. President Trump looks like he's on his way to a peace deal, and everyone has to give him credit for this. It's been absolutely incredible to sit back and watch. He promised you peace in the Middle East, and that is exactly what he is looking to do. So I'll bring the very latest on that. Plus, you know, we have a lineup of incredible guests joining the show today. Julio Rojas, who was yesterday at the roundtable, the Antifa roundtable with President Trump and members of the administration. Well, he'll be joining us this morning to give us some of the lowdown as to what was happening behind the scenes, as well as the plans now for Antifa. And it doesn't look good for the organization, although they don't want you to think it's an organization. It, in fact, is. So he'll be with us to break that down. Also, I'll be joined by Father Calvin Robinson later in the program as well, because he's in Michigan. That's where he's living these days. And it's not looking good for Christians and Catholics and Jewish people. And I mean, everyone who's just not Islamic in Michigan right now. And he's going to break that down for us, because he tried to confront a Muslim mayor. And surprise, surprise, the Muslim mayor did not show up. It's actually the Dearborn Muslim mayor, I should add. Also joining the program later in the show will be the former congressman, Mr. Madison Cawthorn. He'll be joining the program. He is now running for Congress again in the great state of Florida. And so he'll be joining us to talk about that. He'll be talking also about the census, because if you live in Florida, you should be fired up. The 2020 census was intentionally inaccurate, and it took away seats from those who do live in the Sunshine State. And so he's got a lot to sound off on that front as well. Plus, we're going to be joined by a mortician who is going to dig into the Charlie Kirk assassination a little with us. She has been doing some research into all of this. I know a lot of people are skeptical because there was no exit wound, so a lot of people are very taken back by that. I also saw some ideas online floating around that he could have been shot from behind as well. So I'm going to ask her all those questions, because obviously she's looked at the footage. She knows what's going on in the footage. And we look forward to having some clarification on all of that. So a lineup of incredible guests joining the show today. And we've got a bunch of stories that you're also never going to see in the corporate media, like how an individual who was working under the Trump administration was just recently tossed because, well, he was having a relationship with a woman who apparently had very close ties to a CCP official. Yeah, James O'Keefe bringing us that story. So I'll break that report down for you also in the program. Also, Senator Tommy Tuberville, as many of you guys know, he joined us yesterday. Well, right after he left the show, he put together quite the speech and made his way to the Senate floor, where he gave a speech about banning Sharia law here in the United States, but most importantly, how Americans, Christians need to fight to preserve what makes this country amazing and great, and fight for our values. And it was quite the impactful speech, even calling out the genocide of Christians in Nigeria as well. So I'll play that clip for you in just a few moments. And it's not just Tuberville calling out our immigration issues. It is also another senator from the great state of Missouri, Eric Schmidt, also calling it out too. And I was very proud to hear him do that yesterday. So I'll be playing that clip for you in just a few moments. Plus, there was kind of like a brush up also yesterday. Obviously, tensions are very, very high in D.C. because of the government shutdown. You probably haven't noticed much, but it's going to get bad for our service members soon. I'm told in about 6 days they won't be receiving a paycheck, and they're very concerned, those high up at the Pentagon, that our service members are going to be relying on food banks. So this is a serious deal now. We thought it wasn't going to last long, but Democrats are really holding the line when it comes to their illegal invaders and making sure that they do receive health insurance. They won't free up on that one. That is going to be something that they're going to continue to advocate for, but they don't want you to know that's what they're advocating for. They actually deny it when you confront them with that issue. We've got kind of a little bit of a conflict between two House individuals, obviously Hakeem Jeffries and Mike Lawler, who we'll play in just a few moments. So don't go anywhere. We've got more to unpack on The American Journal.
Well, 48 hours ago, our sponsor, Bigly, launched Alex Jones app. Go to alexjonesapp.com and go right to the Apple Store. It's number one in the world in news, surpassing X. And as racing into the top 100 of total apps in the world. Great job, everybody. This is a real shot across the bow for the censors. That is a big deal. I mean, we're ahead of Disney. We're ahead of Uber. We're ahead of everything. We're ahead of X. Number one in news in the world. Takes years to do that with an app. We've been number one before when they banned us in 2018. That took 5-6 years to get to that. Number one in 48 hours. Incredible job. Keep sharing the feed. You can't search it. They don't let you search the app, which every other app you can find. But you just go to alexjonesapp.com, and that takes you right to the subpage of the Apple Store. It's totally free right there, alexjonesapp.com.
Here on this beautiful Thursday morning, a lot to unpack. President Trump making good on a promise, bring peace to the Middle East. There's a lot to celebrate there. So far, things look good. I wouldn't jump the gun, but it looks good so far. So I'll bring the very latest on that. But in case you missed it, we've got a jam-packed program for you today. I'm very excited for my group of guests that are coming to us because Julio Rojas will be joining us in a few minutes. Julio was front and center yesterday in front of President Trump and members of the administration to warn them about how dangerous Antifa is. And so he's going to join us to break all of that down. Plus, I'll be joined by Father Calvin Robinson. Now, if you don't know who Father Calvin Robinson is, you've really missed out on a great one because, and we'll bring it to you today, obviously, but he is one of the very few fighters looking to defend Christianity. And he brought his fight yesterday, or the other day, I should say, to Dearborn, Michigan. And it's really interesting because he tried his very best to go there and confront the Dearborn mayor who went after a Christian resident just a few weeks ago and told them that they don't belong in Dearborn, Michigan. Well, Father Calvin Robinson was going there to confront this mayor, and surprise, surprise, he wasn't in attendance. So Father Robinson's going to be joining us today to discuss that, plus a lot more going on within the church that I think everyone needs to be very aware of course. I'll also be joined by the former U.S. Congressman, Madison Cawthorn, joining the program. Now, Cawthorn, as many of you know, was a fighter in D.C. for a short time, and then the swamp went after him. And then he moved to Florida, and now he's running for Congress in Florida. And I'm very excited about this because I do believe that Madison was done wrong. And I believe he was a young guy, obviously. There was, you know, we know a lot of, as the background and all of that, but he told the truth about what was going on in Washington, D.C., and they didn't like that. And so they went after him. And so he's going to be joining the show later today. We're also going to be joined by a mortician who's going to break down the Charlie Kirk assassination and try to sift through a lot of the conspiracies, plus tell us a little bit about her background and tell us what she thinks actually took place, especially from the video. We don't have an autopsy yet, and so we're kind of working with limited resources right now, but I want to hear her perspective on all of this because I know a lot of you are floating ideas that he might have been shot from behind. I know a lot of people are very skeptical because there was no exit wound. So I want to know if that's strange, if that's normal. So we'll ask her all those questions in just a little bit throughout the show today, guys. We've got a lot to unpack, a lot of truth to expose because, again, the mainstream media is not going to tell you about any of this. But it was exciting news, though, because late yesterday, we found out that President Trump was getting very, very close to his peace deal. Now, he was in front of his roundtable of independent journalists, members of the corporate media, when all of a sudden, the Secretary of State, Mark Rubio, came by and presented President Trump with a note. Now, in that note, pretty much told President Trump, we're getting very close to bringing peace to the Middle East. And so President Trump was very excited about that, telling the media, I've got to get out of here soon. I've got to make sure we finalize this. And it looks like there are agreement on the first phase of the peace deal. Now, again, folks, this is good news if all sides stick to the agreement. Again, we're hearing that there's going to be these hostages that are to be freed and given back to Israel. 20 of them, I believe, is the figure. We've seen Israel come to agreements before. They haven't exactly lived up to those standards. Again, Hamas, terrorists. So we're excited for the president, but we also want to be cautious and bring you the reality that this could turn. But we're very excited for President Trump. I mean, this guy deserves a lot of credit. He promised you, he committed to you that this is what he was going to do. And look, he's done it. He's done it. He has brought all these Middle Eastern countries together and forced both sides to come to the table for an agreement. Joe Biden never would have done that. In fact, he would have encouraged this to go on. Any Democrat in the White House would have no authority at all, no one respecting him or her, and be able to bring this to the table. So this is really impressive. I mean, this is seriously impressive. President Trump says Israel and Hamas obviously have come to the first phase of the agreement, and Israel indicates the hostages are expected to be released sometime maybe on Saturday or Sunday. President Trump then also reacting to the news on Truth Social by saying peace, blessed are the peacemakers. And so he continues to push that narrative. Now, those in the corporate media, I mean, they've just had their hands forced in all of this. They now are forced to admit that President Trump is an incredible, incredible negotiator. Take a listen.
Israel, make no mistake, this is a huge night, potentially the end of the nightmare. For the people of Gaza, this is going to be an enormous relief. For the people of Israel, potentially the end of a two-year-long nightmare.
And for these families still waiting for the remaining hostages who are still alive to come home, this has been an agonizing wait. And of course, the families who will get the remains of loved ones who died while in captivity.
Brett, so what do you make of what the president has said in a social media post that they've signed off on the first phase of the peace plan? What does that mean to you?
Anderson, momentous day. There's not much good news in the world. This is great news. I am trying to hold it together, honestly. I've worked on this issue a very long time.
I just need to underscore what an enormous moment this is for so many people in this region, for the people of Gaza who have endured 2 years of war, for the families of these 48 remaining hostages who have endured 2 years of absolute agony. This is a watershed moment.
This is a major accomplishment for President Trump, something that he's been really trying to work toward. There's been a lot of critics and questioning of whether or not he could pull off sort of negotiating and working to try to get all these sides together. Of course, there were a lot of nations involved. So this is, of course, not just a victory for President Trump, but really a number of Arab nations, Hamas, and of course, Israel. But this is really huge news. And the president, of course, announcing it online.
Obviously, the mainstream media has no other way of spinning it. So they have to tell you the truth. This is a major, major development. Now, of course, the Trump administration promised you peace in the Middle East. And it looks like he is delivering on that promise. Now, this hasn't been easy. And President Trump has been posting throughout yesterday evening and this morning on Truth Social, saying how proud he is to announce the deal, also giving congratulations to those who played a very key role in all of this, even Mike Huckabee, who I have to say I was excited to see. Mike Huckabee has been quite the impressive individual when it comes to pushing for this and when it comes to bringing both sides to the table and negotiating a peace agreement. So it was exciting to see this morning that the president gave him a shout out. But there has been so many incredible people in this fight, looking to make sure that President Trump's promise to bring peace to the Middle East was laminated. And so far, this is the only person in Washington, D.C. who has made you promises and has carried out those promises. Again, you could be critical about certain aspects of the administration, but we didn't want any more wars. We wanted wars to end. And President Trump has a long list now of wars that have concluded or are coming to their end very, very soon. And so this is very exciting news. Very exciting news. President Trump, again, needs all of the credit for all the incredible work he's done over these last few months. I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not easy. And it's going to be interesting to see how those on the left, the far radicals on the left, who was protesting, getting nasty, calling it a genocide, what will they do now? Because they tried this under the Biden administration and Biden didn't care. But now, with President Trump, it appears that he may have just finished the war, ended the war. Now, again, we'll continue to follow it as it develops. I don't know if this is going to go through completely. Again, I'll mention Israel has made several agreements in regards to ceasefires. They claim that the other side violated them, which validated them violating the ceasefire agreement. And so we'll see how this all unravels. Again, we're very hopeful. President Trump doing an incredible job, and he needs to be celebrated for all the great work he has done thus far. All right, I want to switch gears up a little bit because there was an interesting story that happened yesterday while we were on air. It was going to go over and into Alex's show. I know Alex did a great job at digging through what we were learning as it was coming about, but there was an individual who was arrested yesterday for the Palisades fire. Now, he's 29 years old, the suspect, and we're going through the criminal complaint, and we're not really understanding. It's not that we're not understanding. I've got a lot of questions rather than answers after reading the criminal complaint. I want you to take a listen to clip three, because let's just go through what, according to the prosecutors, they know now. Take a listen.
My name is Kenny Cooper. I'm the special agent in charge of ATF's Los Angeles Field Division. Today marks a significant moment in a long road to justice for our community. After more than 8 months of tireless, meticulous work, I stand here with our partners, proud to announce an arrest in connection to the devastating Palisade fires that claimed lives, destroyed homes, and shook this community to its core. Jonathan Rindernesh, age 29, residing in Melbourne, Florida, was taken into federal custody by ATF special agents, a Los Angeles City Fire Department investigator, and a Los Angeles police detective. This partnership and arrest is significant in the three agencies working hand in glove to get this investigation to where it is. Rindernick, as the U.S. attorney mentioned, is charged under Title 18-844-F, malicious destruction by means of a fire of real property owned by an organization receiving federal financial assistance. I know this community has endured a long wait for answers. Families have carried an unmanageable grief, and an entire community has been left to heal while living with questions. Although we cannot share every detail of this investigation, it is still an active investigation, and judicial proceedings remain ahead.
Take a look at all of this, because again and again, I have more questions. Now, the evidence that they're using against this 29-year-old suspect is a little concerning. I know Rob Dew was actually tweeting about this yesterday, and I was in agreement with him, because they're using AI against him. And that makes me a little nervous. Okay, so it's interesting to note that they are claiming that he used ChatGPT to generate an image of burning forest. He also told ChatGPT he burnt a Bible. Again, that's on November 1st, 2029. I'm going to walk you through some of the details in the criminal complaint here. This is where it's all coming from. Again, he was apparently dropped off by an Uber driver at the Pacific Palisades. That's what they're saying here. Now, again, they're also citing a French rap song with a music video depicting a fire. So far, no smoking gun, as we continue to go down the list. Okay, so then they say on January 1st, 2025, the wildfire cameras detected the first glow of the fire. And they're saying that the suspect was somehow, some way, located in the same area, it looks like. At 12:27 a.m., he called 911 to report the fire and asked ChatGPT if he could be at fault for a fire caused by a cigarette. This is why AI is so dangerous. Again, the image you're looking at is an AI-generated image that was used against him in his criminal complaint. Now, again, the fire department shows up. Winds obviously are kicking things up a little bit. And then it looks like before his arrest, he moved to Florida. He grew up in France. These are according to reports. So again, I know I'm no criminal defense attorney, and I will not pretend to be, but I will tell you that nothing seems concrete. Nothing seems like a smoking gun. And this guy, I mean, if you just look at him, I don't see a big conspiracy to take out the Palisades, or, you know, what they wanted to do, which was obviously what they're doing now, try to create more affordable housing. So nothing really makes any sense here with me, and I'm not happy about the use of AI against an individual like this. Okay. I get it. I get it. These seem very strange. These asks, these images that ChatGPT are generating. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you set a fire. And I would imagine any criminal defense attorney is able to poke holes throughout this entire criminal report so far. So it's going to be really interesting to see all play out. I would imagine they would need more evidence to make these charges stick. I cannot imagine a judge allowing this to go to criminal trial thus far. For the destruction that was caused, I would assume this was someone working with a group of people, not just one person. Now, again, this is still in the beginning phases of all of this. So there might be more evidence that's uncovered here. But don't, my point is just don't buy the narrative thus far. Wait for more to come about this because it just doesn't seem to make any sense. And I remember when we were sitting back and watching as all these fires were popping up. And I remember seeing the video of just random fires sparking up. And you're wondering, well, how's this possible? Obviously, this isn't a natural occurrence. But again, it also feeds into what we were told wasn't going to happen. Remember when Democrats told you they weren't trying to create affordable housing? They weren't going to do that. And then all of a sudden, now they are. Gavin Newsom talking about that, even being criticized by President Trump. So there's a lot more here. And obviously, it has something to do with climate change. That's the lie. So I'll continue to follow this story. I'm quite interested in the developments that take place, because I don't see with what's been presented thus far, this making its way to a full-on criminal trial. All right, I want to turn to another story regarding James O'Keefe versus the CCP. James dropping another bombshell report in regards to a Trump official, somebody who's working within the Trump administration, and how they never actually disclosed the fact that someone that they were very close with were dating. Well, apparently this individual had close ties to the CCP. Now, we're going to play clip for you in a second, but apparently this individual worked at the State Department and has since been terminated. Take a listen.
Huge breaking news within the State Department. Secretary Marco Rubio, with the approval of the President of the United States, Donald Trump, has just fired the Foreign Service officer, Daniel Choi, who we at OMG caught on hidden camera revealing his romantic relationship with a CCP affiliate, possible Chinese spy.
I defied my government for love.
Now, according to a new statement from the State Department, quote, today, after presidential review and approval, the Secretary of State has terminated a Foreign Service officer, also known as FSO, who concealed a romantic relationship with a Chinese national with ties to the Chinese Communist Party. Executive Order 14211 states that all officers or employees charged with implementing the foreign policy of the United States must, under Article 2, do so under the direction and authority of the President. Failure to faithfully implement the president's policy is grounds for professional discipline, including separation. Accordingly, the secretary recommended that the FSO be separated for failing to faithfully implement the president's foreign policy, closed quote. Now, a State Department spokesperson told OMG that marks the first time in American history such an action has been taken. And they want the American people to know that decisive measures are now being enforced. Choi admitted to knowingly violating diplomatic security protocols by concealing a romantic relationship with Joy Zhao, the daughter of a senior Chinese Communist Party leader, apparently.
Her dad was either a provincial or a federal minister of education.
Yeah.
So he's like straight up communist party.
Now, Choi confessed that he never filed the required disclosure, even acknowledging that Zhao, quote, could have been a spy.
I don't know. Maybe she could have been a spy even. I don't really know.
Now, thanks to our undercover journalist and the Trump State Department, well, he's finally facing that accountability thing that all you guys out there clamor for. Stay tuned for more. Coming very soon, O'Keefe Media Group and Citizen Journalism Foundation are going to be breaking our biggest stories of the year in the nation's capital, exposing corruption at the highest level. And if they do not arrest the people that we're about to bust, well, then we're probably going to have to launch investigations into the people responsible for making the arrests.
James O'Keefe not missing a beat there. He continues to expose those throughout Washington, D.C. And this is a big one. The CCP threat is a massive threat. And sadly, many don't even realize how bad this has gotten. I mean, we have so many people compromised within our government by the corrupt Communist Party. And it's infuriating. It's infuriating. So it's great to see that as soon as this story came out, the Trump administration immediately moved on it. Again, if this was the Biden regime, like I probably would have gotten promoted. You see, we continue to cover. We had Steve Baker on the show with that bombshell report regarding the Sim farms, which he says is a CCP operation. All across our country, they're setting up these farms where they can take out the 911 call system, take out the wireless system. And sadly, the cell phone providers, the three major ones, haven't really commented on any of this. It's also being utilized to make swatting phone calls as well. So there's a lot here. There's a lot here to uncover. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of James going after these people. You see, you can't conceal a relationship with someone who has very close ties to the CCP. In fact, anyone, any Chinese national, you just assume has those ties. Here in the United States, we have so many compromised individuals. I mean, I remember when we first started talking about the CCP police station that was set up in New York City. And sadly, how nobody really cared to shut it down. And then when they finally did try to shut it down, I mean, it was probably a year and a half later. They pretend like it was shocking news. You see, the Chinese Communist Party has been able to go around our country, set up shop, and there's been very, very little pushback about it. And that's what's so heartbreaking about this, because so many at the top have sacrificed our country to this communist takeover. You see, China would love to take us out. And there are still Americans that don't even understand the threat. I remember when I was over working for Lou Dobbs, and this was years ago. This was back, I believe, in 2018. And I hear Lou every night going after China. And I was like, this guy is overplaying his hand, which I don't think China's a threat. And the more and more I worked on his show, I realized this is massive. And how has no one been screaming about this? Obviously, probably the only one screaming about it's Eric Swalwell, but it's the wrong kind of screaming. You see, these are the kind of politicians who have been sacrificed, or have sacrificed our country, I should add. Eric Swalwell going after everyone else except himself because he doesn't want to admit that he's compromised. So it's good to see James O'Keefe getting to the bottom of that. Folks, I want to remind you all right now to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. We don't know when they're going to be shutting down InfoWars. And so when you head on over to thealexjonesstore.com and make a purchase, you're supporting our next operation. Those doors could shut, whether it's tomorrow, today, next week. We just don't know. So head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com and keep us up and running, because our next operation is going to be much, much bigger. All right, we've got more to unpack with Julio Rojas joining us in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
So you were just telling me that you had a brain disease.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue, I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It is a miracle. It's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day and pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it?
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
I'm not paid to say this, not one dime. This is the best product you guys have ever had. You guys got to order it at the alexjonesstore.com.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene blue works for me.
I feel it in my head and neck too. My brain's going really fast. I really like it.
Unlimited populous power!
Volunteer power!
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
I do feel like it's eliminated the brain fog a lot.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had. Please go to the Alex Jones.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
Look, I know the supernatural is something that isn't supposed to happen, but it does happen.
American Journal. I am Brianna Morello. We're excited to have you all here today. A lot going on in the world, but a lot was happening yesterday in Washington, D.C. President Trump put together an Antifa roundtable, but it was a good kind of roundtable, one that's going to figure out a way to get rid of the organization here in the United States. And President Trump isn't going to back down from any of this. In fact, he called together all of the independent reporters who have been covering the violence with Antifa, because the mainstream media, well, they're intentionally ignoring all of that. But the interesting part to all of this is President Trump made members of his administration also be present during these meetings and listen to what these independent journalists had to say. One of those incredible journalists is Julio Rojas. He was front and center, and we're going to take a listen to clip 12 as to how those on the left continue to call Antifa just an idea. Take a listen.
Antifa is real. Yeah. It's real. It's a threat. I just saw him last weekend over in Portland while they're causing mayhem over there. And the reason why they're such a big problem is because we have Democrats and a lot of people in the mainstream media refusing to acknowledge that they even exist, right? So how can we as a country begin to address it if we have large swaths of, you know, these people who are supposedly decision makers and, you know, people who are supposed to inform, they don't want to say that it exists. You know, because the common argument is like, well, they're not a real organization because there's no national leadership. They don't have a national headquarters. So how can law enforcement go after a group that doesn't exist like that? Well, yeah, law enforcement goes after criminal groups that organize to rob banks or do smash and grabs. They don't have a registered LLC. They don't have official membership cards. They don't have, you know, a business address, but law enforcement still goes after them because they're working as a group. These people don't just show up, you know, randomly at the same time to do the same thing dressed in a very similar fashion, espousing the same ideology. And they say, well, it's an ideology. It's like, well, yes, it's an ideology because there's people alive, present, that believe in it and they're acting on it.
Yeah, I don't recall the mob actually having an LLC either, but they were able to build a RICO case against them. And joining me to discuss is Julio Rojas. He is a national correspondent for The Blaze, and he joins us today. And it's been a very, very busy couple of hours, Julio. So I'm glad that you're up this early and joining us today. Thank you for being here. But, you know, you sat in front of the president yesterday and the key players in his administration, like Pam Bondi, Kash Patel, and you broke all of this down for them and made sure that they understood that this really isn't just an idea. This is actually an organization that has been targeting Americans, especially those independent journalists. So give us some overview on the meeting itself.
I mean, yeah, it was a great roundtable. There was a lot of great people that were invited to this, people that have been putting in the work to be on the ground at these situations. I mean, sometimes in many cases for years, Andy Ngo obviously is probably the one that was most deserving to be present to share his story with the president, especially with all he has suffered for his reporting. But it was nice, right? It was nice just not just to be able to go to the White House, but it was nice to be able to talk to the president and force the mainstream media press pool to be present as well, to listen to our stories. Now, whether they do anything with it, that's on them. But that was also kind of the point, because obviously the president does know about Antifa. Stephen Miller, Pam Bondi, Christine Ohm, they all know about the dangers of Antifa. It is helpful for them to hear from people who are, like I said, directly on the ground with this. But this was to highlight, this was to force the media to kind of highlight what has been happening, not just this past year, but what's been going on for well over a decade, especially. I mean, Antifa really gained steam after Trump won the first time, all the way back in 2016. That's how Andy Ngo got his start in all this. And that's, you know, in some ways, that's how I got my start into really building out my journalism career. So it was good. I mean, it was great to be able to share our experiences, to share our expertise about this topic, because as I've been seeing on my social media, there's still a lot of people who are saying, oh, Antifa's not real. You guys are just making it all up. And, you know, that's willful ignorance. I think it's also stupidity on some people's part. But I just think that this was important to kind of force the issue into the national spotlight. And that was kind of one of the main reasons why that this was held in the first place.
Yeah. And it's really important that we do that, because the media is not covering it. And I remember, I was watching MSNBC. This was a couple of weeks ago, and they said that this is a First Amendment issue, that these individuals have a right to be there and to be present and be able to protest. But Julio, before I go to the next clip, I actually wanted to ask you about this. They make the First Amendment argument that this is just peaceful protesting when they do show up to cities like Portland. How is it not a First Amendment issue?
Well, it's not just Portland, but basically all the anti-ICE protests and riots that I've been at, it's because that they're actively interfering with federal operations. The easiest way that they do that is by standing in the driveway, because vehicles come and go throughout the day, right? Transporting agents, transporting detainees. And so they make this excuse, oh, well, we're just peacefully protesting. And it's, no, you're in the driveway. You're trying to sabotage these operations. That is not protected by the First Amendment. I've never seen any issue at other times if they're just on the sidewalk, if they're, you know, maybe in the roadway, but not blocking traffic. So there is a fine line, you know, like we're not stupid about this. You know, we know what's protected by the First Amendment, what's not, but because the environment is so incentivized on the left to be confrontational, to be violent, because this is, you know, the worst thing to happen, that's why people are doing it in bigger and bigger numbers, because they believe that the narrative is on their side. And I guess on the left it is, because under normal circumstances, people wouldn't tolerate, you know, blocking traffic or swarming federal vehicles.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be tolerated at all. You know, President Trump spoke yesterday about his plans to figure out who's really behind Antifa. Take a listen.
The epidemic of left-wing violence and Antifa-inspired terror has been escalating for nearly a decade, At universities, Antifa has organized riotous mobs to attack campus speakers. I see it all the time. And these are agitators, anarchists, and they're paid. And you'll find that out. You'll be finding it out very soon. You should see what we have on these people. These are bad people. These are people that want to destroy our country. We're not going to let it happen. They've used armed gangs to assault local police in cities nationwide, and they've attacked journalists reporting on their crimes. So the journalists that report on their crimes, don't worry, you're very safe. I hope that's not going to turn you around, but they have been very threatening to people, but we're going to be very threatening to them, far more threatening to them than they ever were with us, and that includes the people that fund them.
All right, so he's obviously going after the money in all of this. Was there anything that you heard when you were on the ground yesterday at the roundtable that you'd like to share with us? Because it sounds like, again, like as we were just discussing, that this might be RICO, that they have been sifting through a lot of the finances behind all of this. Anything that you're hearing?
Yeah, and probably the biggest development is when we were talking to the president, the suggestion came up about designating Antifa not just as a domestic terrorist organization, but a foreign terrorist organization. And that actually opens up more powers to do things. That's why, they use that designation against the cartels in Mexico. Because Antifa, is worldwide, particularly in Europe, in Germany, France, the UK. In fact, I always joke that the only reason why I would go to visit Paris is to cover a riot that Antifa does. And they actually go pretty hard. they are pretty radical over there. You know, I could care less about the Eiffel Tower. But they do. They do, you know, the cells here in the United States do get support internationally. So if you're committing terrorist acts in other countries and you're receiving support from those groups so that you can also carry out terrorist attacks here in the United States, yeah, you should absolutely be, have that designation. And so the president was asking, wait, that hasn't happened yet? And we're all saying, you know, no, Mr. President. And he's like, you want me to do that? And we're like, yeah, let's go ahead. So he goes to Stephen Miller. He's like, yeah, he's like, is that okay, Stephen? So again, that just shows how open he is to new ideas. And you know, like, is this a good idea? And you know, hearing from people that actually know what they're talking about. And so it's nice to see that, right? I mean, cause often when we think about government, we don't typically see that. Now, of course, there needs to be follow through, right? There needs to be follow through, but having that discussion out in public and in the open, that's going to make sure that follow through happens. Because if that doesn't happen, let's say a year from now, we're going to come back and say, hey, why hasn't this happened yet? It's been a year, right? So it's good to see that. It's good to see that. And again, it's good to see that play out, not just for our own benefit, but for the American public to see that.
Yeah. And it was good to also hear from the FBI director, Kash Patel, because he reacted to listening to all of you guys and what you guys were saying. Take a listen.
Has allowed us to go out there and map out these networks. What we are doing at the FBI is simple. It does not require rocket science. We are following the money. Money never lies. And that's what it's going to take to bring down this network of organized criminal thugs, gangbangers, and yes, domestic terrorists, because that's what they are. They are harming everyday citizens in every single one of our communities. And the folks you see here on the right and left, they're some of the bravest men and women we have today. They're reporting the stories live time because the mainstream media won't cover it. They're putting their lives on the line. They're standing up for the flag. The least we can do is stand up for them. So you have my thanks. I read more of your stories than I do theirs because you guys are putting out the truth. And we deserve a country where you are protected as equally as they are. We, in this FBI will go after with the criminals with a vengeance. We will not rest until we find every single seed, money, donor, organization, and funding mechanism that we have. And I want to echo the Secretary's comments on Scott Bessent, who's allowing us to map out these networks through their financial criminal activities, which has been going on for decades. And I would like to remind the American public, they built this disease temple of corruption over decades. And in 8 short months, Mr. President, you have crippled their foundation because of your leadership here, because of the interagency, because of people like Deputy Attorney General Blanche, and because of Attorney General Pam Bondi's fearless leadership to go after criminals wherever they are. They will not be able to hide. They were able to hide and conspire with prior administrations, and we are exposing their corruption from within. And we will go to every single city in this country under Operation Summer Heat and the other operations we are doing at the FBI to bring these criminals to justice. We will arrest every single one of them from whatever perch you sit in, private or public, no matter how your goal or your ambition is, it will be crushed by the Constitution, because the American people deserve law and order, and that's what we're going to give you.
Julio, what is it like to have an FBI director who actually listens to independent journalists, responds to them, and then comes up with a plan for those that are actually threatening them?
I mean, it feels good, admittedly, because, and this is something that I told the president, that a lot of us are friends. Like, at that roundtable, a lot of us have became friends because we would see each other at these events all the time, and we're often out there by ourselves. You know, we don't work for billion-dollar companies that can have support a whole team behind a reporter. I mean, you have the field producer, you have the camera guy, you have the security guard, sometimes multiple, depending on how chaotic, you know, dangerous it is. And for us, we're just out there on our own, just running and gunning. That's the phrase I like to use. We just run and gun, and you know, and that comes with a lot of risk. And you know, that's why we've had Andy Ngo been attacked at Katie Davis Court recently, Nick Sorter. So it's nice to know that that, you know, should anything happen, and obviously we don't want that, but should anything happen to us, at least somebody is going to make sure that justice is done. And so that kind of helps with, you know, factoring, you know, putting in that risk factor is like, okay, you know, what is worth the risk, right? It's dangerous. I mean, I don't like to talk about it because, you know, what I feel is not the story, right? The story is what's happening, but this isn't easy work. Sure, there's like benefits to it, obviously. I mean, we didn't expect, I certainly wasn't expecting, this invitation. But it's a lot of time away from family. It's a lot of time away from friends. I mean, I've spent more time in hotels this year than my own bed. And there's people out there that would be more than happy to silence me, through one way or another. So it's just reassuring that, people in important positions are listening to us, are watching our stuff, and yeah, just having our backs. And so, even without that, because we've been doing that for a while, we're still going to do it. You know, this is an important topic. This is, you know, people deserve to know what's actually happening in these chaotic situations. Because again, yeah, the propagandists in the mainstream media, they're not going to tell the story right. So if they, with their billions of dollars and, you know, really broad reach, aren't going to do it, then I'll happily take up the mantle and do it along, you know, obviously all the other great reporters there.
Yeah. And Julio, I don't think people get it. As an independent journalist, you're on your own. Like you just detailed for our audience, everyone has like these massive corporations behind them, but you truly are on your own when you're out there, you're covering these things. And, it's good to see though that the other independent journalists that are on the ground with you reporting on this are sticking together. I was excited to see that. I was excited to see, you know, when Savannah Hernandez was in Portland and then she was with Nick Sorter, and also, you know, just like all of the groups of independent journalists who stick together when they're reporting on these things, because groups like Antifa target you guys. And, you know, you talk about the threats. There's a significant amount of threats that are all like every one of us is dealing with right now. And it's getting increasingly worse. And I think we need to have these discussions, because whether you're on the ground reporting or whether you're in a studio reporting, these groups are getting increasingly violent and making threats against independent journalists. So we need to be vocal about that. We need to be talking about them more often, because I don't know if people really understood how bad it was getting this year. I report on the swatting stuff, but a lot of people didn't want to talk about it because they didn't want to egg on more threats. And then when Charlie Kirk was assassinated, a lot of people were brave enough to come forward then and report that he's not the only one who's received death threats. It's been a lot of us. And so I think we need to keep having these conversations, because we need to let our audience know, also let those in the corporate media know, that when we talk about stories, when we're reporting on stories, we're actually the ones who are putting our lives on the line here. Although they live in their cushy little areas and their corporate media jobs, we really are the ones with our feet on the ground and out there really putting a lot on the line. So Julio, I want to thank you for all that you've done. I want to also remind our audience that you released a book on the 2020 riots, and I want to remind everyone, it is an incredible book. Head on over to Amazon. This is a good one because it outlines what you experienced during the 2020 riots. And again, you know, fiery, but mostly peaceful. We remember that Chyron. It was legendary over in CNN, of course. But the spin's over.
The only good thing CNN did was giving me the title for my book. Yeah.
I know. It's literally the only thing they're good at. I mean, we played a soundbite of them praising the president for the peace deal, but there's not many good soundbites you get from CNN. And look, our control room is the best. They were able to pull it up pretty quickly.
I thought that that was Photoshopped. When I woke up the next morning, I thought, oh, wow, that's a great Photoshop. And then someone posted the video. I'm like, wait, that's real?
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was a great time.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is insane. That is insane that people thought that that was an acceptable Chiron. It's mind blowing. Julio, thank you for all the incredible work you're doing. We greatly appreciate it. So thank you.
Of course. Thanks.
Folks, I mean, I was going to wait till we took Julio off camera. Fox pulled me off of Chiron duty. I was not allowed to do Chirons because, they weren't happy with my Chirons. I obviously, as you know, if you watch this show, you know, I'm very spunky. Got a couple of punchlines. I love calling those on the left communists because that's what they are. And it just didn't go over well over there. So I was banned from Chiron duty. Whoever was at CNN who put that lower third in there, I'm sure they were promoted. All right, folks. So there's a lot more to unpack in the program today. I'm excited that you're all joining us today. I want to remind you that InfoWars is fighting to tell you all the truth, and we need you in this fight as well. Head on over to the alexjonesstore.com right now because, folks, we are not sure when they're going to close the front door on us. Could be today, could be tomorrow, could be next week. We're not 100%. So when you head on over to the alexjonesstore.com, you're helping fund our next operations. So we greatly appreciate when you do so. Head on over to the alexjonesstore.com right now. Help us keep this going. We're obviously face first in this information war, and they're trying their best to shut us down, but that won't work, of course. All right, I want to turn to some very, very interesting clips I've been seeing on social media. This one, because I love calling out Lindsey Graham, because I think he is just selfish. I don't think he's a good person, and I've just had enough of seeing him. Senator Lindsey Graham is upset, obviously, because he found out through Arctic Frost that he was being spied on by the Biden regime. And I guess he thought he was immune to it because he was very favorable to them. I remember when he literally said that he wants to ban abortion completely right before the midterm elections, knowing that we as Republicans didn't have a majority in any branch of government at the time, and he'd never be able to get it passed. But he encouraged those, when you say something that outrageous, on the left, to go out and vote because it's such an emotional thing for them. I mean, he's just someone who I would say probably thought he was buying immunity from those on the left. So he was upset when he found out that they didn't really like him that much. No, they didn't. So we're going to play clip six for you because he wants you to be angry about him being added to this list and having his calls spied on by Jack Smith. Take a listen.
And to find out that Jack Smith in 2023, 30 months after the fact, wants to know who I called and where they were at and where I was at is beyond unnerving. And whether you like me or not or agree with my politics, it should bother you greatly that a United States senator would be, his phone records or her phone records would be subpoenaed by the FBI 30 months later with no reason to believe I'm involved in any crime. It is really an abuse of the process.
Oh, Lindsey Graham. Americans should be outraged that a senator was spied on. Well, if you're at home right now, let me just hold on to your outrage. Don't let it rip yet. I'm going to tell you, Lindsey Graham, that the reality is the rest of us have been completely outraged when the Biden regime was targeting Americans. Those who showed up to a rally, which they were permitted to do, they were spied on by the Biden regime. I don't think I actually ever really heard Lindsey Graham call that out. Again, I'm talking to J6ers. They're all telling me that they think their lines are being listened in on. They're telling me one of them, up on his utilities pole, he's got this weird box outside of his utilities pole right in front of his home, and they just recently put it out there. And he just couldn't tell if it was the FBI who did it. Tell him to snap a picture, send it my way, put it in my FBI group chat, and long behold, everyone was in agreement. That is something that belongs to the agency. So when we were trying to reach out and trying to get politicians in D.C., to get active on the issue, what happened? Well, crickets. We had a very limited group of politicians that got in that fight and wanted to push back. But by very limited, I mean less than a handful. Less than a handful. Most ignored me. And keep in mind, I started covering J6 and I was very down the middle on the issue until I realized how bad the federal government was going after these people. They weren't trying to get them on legitimate charges. They weren't trying to go after them because they had actually committed acts of violence. They were just trying to go after them because they didn't like their political views. They wanted to make sure that they sent a very clear message. Now, Lindsey Graham was never outraged over the issue. In fact, he always seemed to miss it. Never directly deal with any of this. I don't remember any clip of Lindsey Graham going out there and calling out the Biden regime for going after Americans. I don't even remember hearing him go after Barack Obama when he decided to spy on journalists because he wanted to know who their sources were. So now you think the American people should gather around you and say, that's not fair. You're special. You're part of a protected class. No, Lindsey Graham, you're not special. In fact, you are a horrible human being. You are a warmonger. You are an awful person. You have continuously gone out there and cheerleaded for the deaths of thousands of people because, well, that makes you happy. He was literally foaming at the mouth. Foaming at the mouth with the idea that the Russia-Ukraine war can continue on. So, yeah, maybe Jack Smith violated your constitutional rights. Welcome to the party. All of us had our constitutional rights violated. So spare Lindsey Graham of your fake outrage. Fake outrage. Because Lindsey Graham wants you, that creepy, creepy man. And I've only heard creepy things about his home, him, his addiction to fast food and leaving the wrappers everywhere. Lindsey Graham is garbage. He's always been garbage. In fact, Lindsey Graham is only outraged because now these issues affect him. Imagine being so self-absorbed that now you want the American people to be outraged because you thought you were immune. You thought because you helped Democrats win the midterms by going out there and talking about abortion and banning abortion, when you knew that we had no authority to create any legislation that would pass any branch of government because we never had the majority. But you did it anyway to help Democrats get their voters out and vote. So Lindsey Graham could kick rocks. None of us care that his rights were violated. In fact, I encourage the Biden administration to go after him. You see, South Carolina doesn't give us the best politicians, and Lindsey Graham is proof of just that. So my message to the American people, don't be outraged for Lindsey Graham. Now, there were great people who shouldn't have been on that list, of course, but Lindsey Graham isn't one of them. Isn't one of them. All right, we've got more to unpack. Throughout the show, we're heading into the second hour. I feel like time is flying by. I feel like it's flying by, but don't go anywhere. We got a lot more to unpack, like I said, and make sure you head on over right now to the App Store and download the AJN Live app. It's rising to the tops of the charts. We're in the number one spot right now. Obviously, we're going to brag about that for a very long time, but you guys trust us with the news. We greatly appreciate you for doing so. So make sure you head on over and download the app. Stay in contact with us. More to unpack in just a few moments. Do not go anywhere.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know,
$30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
Journal. We're kicking off the second hour of the program with a lot to go through. I've got Father Calvin Robinson joining us in just a few moments. We've also got former Congressman Madison Cawthorn joining the show. We're excited about that as well. A lot of incredible people joining us in the second hour of the program. So a lot to kick off there. But we've got breaking news. Breaking news coming to us from Israel. Take a look at this tweet. The Prime Minister of Israel is ready to give President Donald Trump the Nobel Peace Prize, saying he deserves it. I don't know if that's an AI-generated image or a live shot, wink, wink. But obviously, folks, President Trump impressing everyone with his negotiation skills, but also being very transparent on his commitment to bring peace to the Middle East. Now, again, we're just an agreement on the phase one process of all of this. And Israel in the past has violated ceasefires, and they justify it by saying that Hamas is the one who violated first, but we are optimistic. We are optimistic because peace is something that we all signed up for, of course. And President Trump just continuously ending these wars. And he makes it look so easy, too. I mean, yesterday during the Antifa roundtable, when he's talking about it, he just goes, looks at the paper, goes, oh, it looks like we got a peace deal coming up soon. You guys got a couple more minutes with me. I mean, that is incredible. That is incredible. And you know it's really awesome because the corporate media can't really sit there and spin it. And they were praising him. We played the clips for you early in the show. They were praising him nonstop yesterday. I mean, who doesn't like peace? And for all those far left-wing protesters who are going out there and calling in a genocide and calling for the end of the war, you guys have to call him actually Daddy Trump at this point. You can't call him president anymore. You have to call him Daddy. Those are the rules, and we're going to abide by those. It's just been so fascinating to sit back and watch all of this unravel. And I mean, if it happens, it happens. I think that's incredible. The fact that there's going to be potentially 20 hostages freed by Hamas, brought back to Israel, is absolutely incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And this is just on the cusp. Still early for me, folks. Bear with me. Obviously, the 2-year anniversary of Hamas's attacks. So again, this is great news. I don't even think I've heard a single negative response to any of this thus far. They're forced to admit this is great. This is great for not only the country, because it's one less foreign war that we have to continue to fund. But this is really impressive. So President Trump, according to the Prime Minister of Israel, is worthy of the Nobel Peace Prize. I think the rest of us would be in agreement on that, especially because it's like a laundry list of wars that he has stopped. And it's crazy because, like, wasn't there someone occupying? I mean, Joe Biden wasn't obviously there, right? He was just pretending to be there. But there was a team of people behind Joe Biden running the show, and they couldn't do this? Maybe they didn't want to. Probably they didn't want to. President Trump gets it done, and he's been on Truth Social giving thanks to everyone on his team who was able to carry all of this out. And it's incredible to see. It truly, truly is. I don't think we give that man enough credit. I mean, we're critical here. But I mean, in regards to ending wars, it's not easy. It's definitely not easy, especially with a terrorist organization like Hamas. President Trump gets it done, though. He's working with people that those on the left said we can't even take meetings with. How dare President Trump shake Vladimir Putin's hands? The hand of the North Korean dictator. You see what happens when you open dialogues up and you talk to people that you may not agree with? Well, you finally get to the root causes of why there's been so much tension, and you bring peace and you save lives. All right, guys, like I mentioned, we're going to be joined by Father Calvin Robinson in just a few moments. There's a lot going on in Michigan. As many of you guys know, the Dearborn mayor there doesn't really like Christians. And he's going after one of the residents for just simply talking about how he's not approving of these Islamists taking over his community and wanting to promote horrible people. We'll be joined by Father Robinson in just a moment. Do not go anywhere. There's more of the American Journal to unpack. We'll be right back.
Alex Jones, patriot, a man they tried to silence. They came for his voice, his platform, his life, but they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology, we have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger, faster, louder.
Go to alexjonesapp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Calvin Robinson joining me in just a moment. We've also got former Congressman Madison Cawthorn joining the program as well, because he is running for Congress in the great state of Florida. And so he'll be joining us to discuss. But we talked about a story in Dearborn, Michigan not too long ago, and it was very interesting. I want to bring it back to the front of all of this, because it's very interesting, because the mayor of Dearborn, he was lecturing a Christian about coexisting, and he pretty much told this Christian man that he is not wanted in their community. Take a listen.
Hezbollah, bombed the embassy in Beirut, and including many Americans. So I just feel it's quite inappropriate.
You are an Islamophobe. And although you live here, I want you to know, as mayor, you are not welcome here. And the day you move out of the city will be the day that I launch a parade celebrating the fact that you moved out of the city, because you are not somebody who believes in coexistence.
You know, it's almost laughable when a Muslim man talks to you about coexistence. They have taken over Dearborn, Michigan, and it's heartbreaking to see the updates. It's heartbreaking to hear what's actually happening. And they just want the rest of us to just comply. They're not looking to coexist. They're looking to take over Michigan. And we have endless pieces of proof of just that. And the fact that they're going to be lecturing their own Christian residents to get out if they don't like it tells you all that you need to know. Joining me now to discuss is Father Calvin Robinson. He has been in this fight for quite some time across the pond, and now bringing it to the United States. He is looking to push back because the United States is worth saving, and he understands that what's unraveled in the UK over the years is our future if we don't aggressively push back. So it is an honor to have him on today's show. Father Robinson, I want to thank you for being here. You know, you wanted to push back on that mayor, and so I saw you post on X yesterday that you made an appearance over the week, and sadly, he wasn't present during the, I believe it was the City Hall meeting. So walk us through that.
Absolutely. So I saw this clip that you showed where the mayor of Dearborn, Mayor Hamoud, told Pastor Ed, a Christian pastor, that he's no longer welcome. And actually, he went as far as to say, "I'll hold a celebration when you leave," which I thought was quite divisive of him, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Not very inclusive. And he put this big show on to say that you're Islamophobic because you don't support our idea of naming a street after Suleiman, who happens to be a supporter of Hezbollah. Now, I think any American or any Westerner, anyone who lives in Christendom, would say, we don't name streets after terrorist sympathizers. It's quite a strange thing to want to do. But when you have an area that's run by a Mohammedan mayor, you kind of expect it. Anyway, this Christian pastor pushed back, and the mayor pushed him back, and I thought it was inappropriate. So I went down to the next City Hall meeting in Dearborn. I obviously live and serve in Michigan now, so I drove over there to the City Hall, and he wasn't there. I wanted to confront him face-to-face and speak to him in person and say, how dare you, in a Christian country, persecute and oppress Christians for speaking up for the truth in concern of you supporting terrorist sympathizers, renaming streets in a Christian country after a Mohammedan terrorist sympathizer. It's outrageous. Fortunately, there were a number of floor speeches that were fantastic that evening. One of them by a local Turning Point chapter spokesman called Noah Mullins, who spoke out to say, this is where I was born. As a Christian man, as an American man, I don't want to see what's happening over there in Britain happen over here in Dearborn, Michigan, where the Mohammedans essentially take over. There was a wonderful woman called Andy who spoke out and said, the call to prayer has been implemented across Dearborn. So they pray that Adan, you know, that screeching they make five times a day. From 5:30 in the morning, they play that over loudspeakers into people's homes, into schools' playgrounds. And this Christian woman got up to say, not very happy with it, it needs to stop. The police chief, the DEI police chief, Shaheen, I think his surname is, said, oh, well, it's just the same as church bells, isn't it? They equate everything as if it's just, no, it's not just the same. To hear Christian church bells in a Christian country is expected, firstly. Secondly, it's not five times a day. Thirdly, it's not at 5:30 in the morning. Fourthly, it's not on loudspeakers. Fifthly, it's not blasted into people's homes and into school playgrounds. And it's this constant, oh, well, you must accept everything we do because it's a faith and all faiths are equal and everything's the same. It's not the same. Islam is clearly counter to Christianity. This is clearly a Christian country. And actually, they shouldn't try to take over.
Yeah, and that's the reality that they don't want to deal with, right? They came here. They wanted to live in our country, and we welcomed them because we actually do want to coexist with others. But it's not the same on their side of all of this. And, you know, you just cited the DEI police chief. I actually want to play clip 17 because it walks you through all of this. Take a listen.
The two or three violations that we have had in the last couple of years have been met with compliance as soon as we've talked to the religious institutions. It's no different than church bells that you might hear on Sunday.
Shame.
Yeah. Okay.
The ordinance.
No outbursts from the crowd, please. Okay, folks, if you'd like to address the crowd, you can fill out a card and we can have you speak, okay?
The ordinance prohibits.
Yeah, that's no church bell. And it gets a little bit better because Alex Jones actually posted a video the other day online, and I want to play clip 18 for you a little bit because it tells you what really is going on in Dearborn and what these people who live there have to listen to. Take a listen. Go.
Can you imagine waking up to that every single morning?
I don't even know.
And so in that clip, you can hear when the police chief is trying to say that this is okay, this is appropriate because it's just the same as church bells. You can hear me in the background saying, shame, shame on you for equating that. And of course, the president of the council tries to shut me down and say, if you want to talk, you can't interrupt, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is that this is not the same. This is foreign. It's actually worse than foreign. It's a horrible noise and people don't deserve to have that noise pollution in their homes. But it goes against the city ordinance. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed loudspeakers to blast things out, whether it's for your faith or not. But because they are Mohammedan, it's allowed, isn't it? And it's all about this inclusivity and this diversity. And the police chief is the same police chief who says we need more Mohammedans, or he doesn't use that word, on the police force because it needs to be more representative of our communities. How about having people that are good at their job that, you know, find criminals and arrest them? That should be your priority as a police chief, surely. Not what color skin they have or what faith they have. It's absurd that they're just still jumping through these woke bandwagons when we have a president who said woke is dead. It's time to end it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the part here that's really critical because they don't want to end it all. And it's sad because, you know, I come from New York and New York is also dealing with this kind of takeover as well. And they are blasting the prayer in certain parts of New York City. And very few people are pushing back on it. They're actually afraid to do just that. And it's sad because this would not be tolerated if it were any other group of people. We just tolerate it, though, because sadly, like we see in the UK, I think people just fear Islam, and they fear those who criticize will get attacked. And I think that's what people are so just quiet and compliant with all of this, is because they fear going out there and what the repercussions of all this might be. But there's a couple of people that aren't fearful. And I want to play this for you because Senator Tommy Tuberville, who we had on the show yesterday, after he left our show, he actually made his way to the Senate floor and he spoke about banning Sharia law, which I actually think isn't a thing anymore it's not a thing at all because Sharia law isn't something that you could actually implement here in the United States. But most importantly, he's calling out the genocide that's going on right now in Nigeria, which very few people are willing to say because Christians are being slaughtered by Islamic terrorists. Take a listen.
You also won't hear from Democrats about how radical Islamic terrorists are currently carrying out a mass genocide of Christians in Nigeria. Think about this. More than 62,000 Christians have been slaughtered since 2000 by radical Islamic terrorists in Nigeria. You heard that right, 62,000. And just this year alone, more than 7,000 Nigerian Christians have been murdered because of their faith alone. You can't turn on the TV without hearing about Israel's so-called mass genocide of Palestinians every day. And yet when it comes to 62,000 Christians being slaughtered by radical Muslims, it's radio silence. This extreme ideology is straight from the pit of hell, and it has no place in American society. We are blessed that freedom of worship is a constitutional guaranteed right in this country. That's what our forefathers fought for. If you want to come here legally, practice a peaceful version of Islam, and blend into our society by adopting the treasured American values of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you are welcome to do so. But if you believe that Sharia law supersedes American law, you should be deported immediately.
Now, we have a small group of politicians that are willing to speak out on this issue, Tuberville being one of them. He's running for governor in Alabama, too, right now. And groups like Hare aren't very happy with his open criticisms of their so-called religion. And so they have attacked him. But I wanted to ask you, Father Robinson, because you would know better than anyone else. You come from the UK. You've seen what's unraveled there because politicians were too weak to stand up for their country and stand up for Christian values. Why do you think it's really important for people like Tuberville and Moore to come out and speak out against this issue?
It's vital because if people don't integrate, they take over, they dominate. And at the moment, this was pointed out at the council meeting by a young chap called Ryan, in that at the moment there are Americans who are Muslim, but there are also Muslims in America. And there's a key difference. Anyone that comes to America should integrate into American culture and aimed, if they're going to become a citizen, they should become American. What you can't have is people who come over to America and bring their own culture, bring their own ideology, and want to implement that here. And we've seen it happen in my homeland, in Britain. There are 85 Sharia courts in Britain. So the Islamic law, Sharia, is more common in Britain than anywhere else in Europe combined. That's a lot of Sharia courts. And that means that they have their own legal system operating parallel to the law of the land. It should be illegal. You know, but for one example, polygamy has been illegal in the UK for a long time. However, Mohammedans come over to our land with a wife back home, and they come over and they marry another wife in Britain. Therefore, they're committing polygamy. Sometimes they bring their wives with them. Sometimes they've got three wives in the same house. And it's outstanding that we let them get away with this. But that's just the start of the slippery slope. The things that they do and enact are far worse. But the problem is, by their culture, by their own law, their legal system, it's allowed. And if we allow them to bring their own culture and their own legal system with them, how can we stop them? So at the beginning, when you invite these people in, you have to say assimilate or go home. Otherwise, your entire culture, your entire society is at risk.
Yeah, no, it is at risk. And sadly, I think most people don't realize we are walking a very thin line right now, and we need everyone's hands on deck in this fight. I also wanted to turn before you go to a topic that I know is clearly close to you. There's an archbishop in Canterbury, it looks like, who has now been brought in, and this is somebody who is supporting abortion. We've got her photo right now. She's supporting abortion. She is woke. She's a feminist, and she supports critical race theory. It's strange to see a female take on this role. Not strange. It just shouldn't be. But I know this is a topic that you've been sounding off on, so give us a little bit of insight on what's going on here.
I mean, you raised all the good points there in that a woman cannot become an archbishop because a woman can't become a priest. That's, well, by definition, that's a priestess. So we don't have those in Christianity. And that's not because we're sexist or misogynistic. It's because in Christianity, we realize that men and women are not interchangeable. Men cannot become women. Women cannot become men. Men cannot become mothers. Women cannot become priests. They are two distinct vocations, very God-called vocations that are important to our way of life. And actually, men and women complement each other. And the church has different roles for both. And so when we have women stepping into this role, what we have is transgenderism in the church. And indeed, there is an actual transgender archdeacon as well as the woman archbishop. So it gets worse and worse. But why is it a problem for her in particular? Well, I know Dame Sarah Malawi. She is the one who refused to have me ordained in the Church of England because I wouldn't subscribe to Black Lives Matter. And she said to me, the church is institutionally racist. And I was like, this is clearly woke. You're shoving Marxism into the church. It has no place there. But she's come out and said, I'm not pro-life. We can't have a pro-choice or a pro-abortion Christian leader. It goes against the faith. She's pro-LGBTQ, saying that she believes in same-sex blessings, some of which are sexual in nature. Sounds like gay marriage. And again, something that can exist in the secular world, can't exist within the church. These things have meanings. To a Christian, marriage is a lifelong, indissoluble union between one man and one woman for the blessings of that couple, the community, and for the procreation to go forth and multiply. You can't do that with two men, and you can't do that with two women, okay? And these things are sinful in the eyes of God. He's called these things abhorrent, so we can't ask him to bless them. Likewise with abortion, the greatest genocide in human history. Women have killed more humans through abortion than men have killed in all wars, famines, and pestilence combined. That's how many people were killing since abortion was decriminalized in the 60s and 70s. It's absurd that we are living through the darkest ages in human history, and actually we don't even recognize it. And worse than that, we have Christian leaders who are enforcing and encouraging it. It's despicable. It's a disgrace. She should be gone. And anyone that supports that needs to be taught the truth of the Christian faith, that we faith, hope, and love. We love every single human life because every life is sacred. Therefore, we can't promote Black Lives Matter because all lives matter. We can't promote abortion because babies matter, whether they're born or unborn. And we can't support same-sex marriage because marriage means something, a man and a woman in a lifelong indissoluble union. And so someone who's leading the faith that is going against all of that needs to be fired.
Yeah. I mean, it's common sense, but here's my follow-up on that, because, you know, I've continued to travel around to cities, and I'm watching as these churches are putting these flags in their windows, these BLM flag, these LGBT flags, and I'm wondering, how do we even get to this point? Because I don't remember seeing this throughout my childhood, even going to New York City quite often, but now it feels like it's going, it feels like it's everywhere at this point. How have we gotten to this point where these churches are making these types of political statements and accepting the fact that, men and men could get married and they could have surrogacy and they could have children? And it's not something that's anywhere in the Bible, or there's no actual map for any of this. And yet for some reason they're misinterpreting the Bible and pretending like this is all acceptable.
It's very simple. People want to be nice people. They want to be compassionate. Yeah. And that's a good thing. But it's misguided in that we're not supposed to affirm people where they are. And the modern church wants to say, you know, God loves you as you are. You know, you're welcome as you are. And that's not true. God wants better for us. He wants us to stop sinning and become like him, right? And that's a lifelong task, a mission that we'll never perfect in this world. But it's something we're striving towards. And so when we leave people in their sin, we're leading them towards damnation, unfortunately. The Christian message is to sin no more. Christ spent time with all kinds of people, tax collectors and prostitutes, but it was not he who went away changed, it was them. And that's the Christian message we have to return to. We have to start teaching about sin. What is sin and why to avoid it and how to teach proper true love. And true love is, if you love someone, you want them to go to heaven. If you want them to go to heaven, you want them to stop sinning. Therefore, stop affirming people in their sin and start leading them to Christ.
Yes. Well, thank you, Father Calvin Robinson, for joining the show today. I think that's a really important message that we need to get out there. So I appreciate you joining us, of course, and you are an incredible fighter. Make sure you all give him a follow right now on X. It's at Calvin Robinson. That's at Calvin Robinson. We appreciate your time, sir. So thank you.
God bless you.
God bless you as well. Folks, I want to turn again to the immigration issue because it's a very important one. And like I said, when I was speaking with Calvin Robinson, it's something that some GOP lawmakers are getting in the fight on. But specifically, we're not just talking about illegal immigration. We're also talking about legal immigration. And the senator from the great state of Missouri is sounding off on the issue, Eric Schmidt. He actually gave a great, I guess, a great little kind of speech in regards to H-1B visas and how it's destroying the American dream. Take a listen.
We have to be kind of unafraid to talk about, you know, not just, you know, illegal immigration, but also some of the flaws and the abuses with the legal immigration system that we have right now. H-1B, I mean, I talked about it in that speech too. Where I grew up, in a working class neighborhood, the people that I grew up around were hit with this sort of double whammy, which was those blue collar jobs were shipped to China and other places. Terrible idea to include them in the World Trade Organization. Those jobs are shipped to China. And then as they go out and look for different jobs, they're now competing with lower wage, lower skilled workers who are imported into this country, right? Like that's patently unfair to the people who dealt with that. Now what you see which is what's interesting about this H-1B issue is white collar workers, right? These are not like you know, if the idea behind the program is to have the best and the brightest and few come in to handle jobs we don't, okay, you can have some sort of merit to that, maybe. But that's not what's happening. Like, these are a lot of people coming to take American jobs. In many ways, older Americans or Americans that are paid more than what they can pay the H-1B folks who are coming in are training their replacements in the humiliation of just so they can get their severance. Like, that's the kind of abuse with the legal immigration system that we have to have the courage to address too.
Yes, we do need to have that courage. And I think it's really interesting to map out the argument about how these visas are really just destroying the American dream. They're taking jobs away from Americans because companies are looking for cheaper labor. No, that is unacceptable. If you want to operate in our country, if you want to conduct business in our country, you better support Americans. We need to be more aggressive on that role. I know President Trump is now implementing, I think it's a $100,000 fee for those who are looking to get these H-1B visas. And so that does significantly help. But why do we need it in the first place? If American workers aren't skilled enough, where you have to pull in others, foreigners from other countries, why aren't we fixing our training times or our programs or our colleges? I mean, there's so much here that isn't being addressed, and it is abuse. It is abuse. These companies have been abusing it for far too long. They need to be called out on it, and they need to be flagged. I mean, this is not acceptable anymore. You know, I obviously live in Texas now, and it's heartbreaking because I've been to Texas. I love Dallas. And now as I drive around, I am just shocked at all the people who are now living in the Plano region. I mean, it was never this way. I used to come down here often. I've been coming down here for 10 years. All of a sudden now it's changed, and there's no culture. A lot of people are coming here on these visas, and they're not very welcoming. You know, we as Americans, we look each other in the eye, we say good morning, we wave to one another because we want to live in a community. The people through these visa programs don't want that. They are here because it's their job to be here, and they understand that. And a lot of the times, those funds that they are gathering from their salaries here are just being shipped back to their homelands. So again, I don't want people here who do not want to actually contribute to our country. I don't want people here who don't belong here. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. Because the reality is American workers are very much able to do these types of jobs. And for anyone to sit there and push back and say, no, they don't. No, they are capable of doing those jobs. We should be looking at the education system. We should be looking at how do we train these people. Because just sitting here and making it the new norm that we're just going to ship these jobs away to foreign countries and then bring in foreigners to our own country because we're incapable of doing it is absolute garbage. Is absolute garbage. Get rid of the visa programs altogether when it comes to these employers. We don't need them here. We don't. Americans have intentionally been dumbed down over the years. And of course, we know why that is. They want to make you rely on the government. They don't want you to be independent. They don't like the fact that you have success. Because when you're successful, you don't support those on the left. And so they've infiltrated schools and intentionally have made Americans dumber. But that's not acceptable. We need more for our country. We need to bring that standard bar higher. Because it's absolutely ridiculous that we continue to say that we need to export these jobs. Folks, I'm excited to be joined in just a few moments by former U.S. Congressman Madison Cawthorn, because there's a story that's not really making its way onto the mainstream media's radar and has to do with how Democrats have intentionally stolen the 2020 census, obviously taking voices away from Americans when they do just that, figuring out new ways to kind of count those who aren't supposed to be in our country, well, counting them into the census and making sure that they get extra House seats. And for those of you who live in Florida, this is deeply concerning. So he'll be joining us in just a few moments. And he's running for Congress in the great state of Florida as well. So we've got a lot to sound off with in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
I'm jacked up on the Methylene Blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue and the Ultimate CMOS on a monthly basis. Take about 5-year supplements. So it's been helping me out for the last 3 years, lost 22 pounds. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I was honestly in the chat on Rumble, bashing, like getting sick of Alex plugging it. But I tell you what, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I was so bad with the MS. I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue is able to get everything that you're taking, all your antibiotics or whatever medicines you're taking, supplements. And what it does, it helps to cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. Methylene blue will help things push it through to where it needs to go. I was at my store, and I keep the TV on at my store of InfoWars, and I heard Alex Jones talking about methylene blue. Well, right away, my ears perked up because I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I ordered two bottles of it because you had to buy one, get one free. So I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing. I take the capsules twice. I take two of those a day.
And you're saying with the methylene blue, you're taking it with ivermectin, and you're using our methylene blue, and it's kept you regressed, but now you're taking this, and you're back to being normal, or what's your level at
I'm
right
walking.
Now?
I'm walking.
Okay.
No, I'm, you know, I own a jewelry store, and I'm able to, don't get me wrong, I have bad days.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something, I'm walking without a cane.
Okay.
And the bad days that I may have, maybe like once every couple weeks, but I'm able to speak properly, where my everything was lagging with me.
Right.
The lesions were showing very bright in my brain. And when I started on the methylene blue, which I couldn't take the liquid. I bought the liquid, but I just couldn't get it down. And I was trying to find like a concoction, and all of a sudden the pills came out. So I ordered the pills. I take two of those a day. I've been taking that with everything else, with the ivermectin. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Well, that is great to hear. You know,
talk to you.
Because, you know, I'm glad to hear that. That really makes me feel good for, you know, the products that we offer to people. And, you know, the methylene blue, it really has been a game changer around here in terms of people getting it and seeing effects immediately, being able to to acquire that quality of life they want. And that's really great to hear.
I will put money on it. Like I said, I used to have to pay $10,000 a week to get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day and pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Well,
thank
you.
Me having it.
Thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for helping your family too, because, you know, sometimes people, they don't want to tell their family. They don't want to say anything because then, oh, you're supposed to mind your own business and not tell people about health. That's a doctor's job, you know, but no, it is our job to tell our families, hey, this is what I found out. This is what I found that works. Why don't you try it?
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited that you're all joining us today. We've got a lot to unpack in just a few moments with former Congressman Madison Cawthorn joining the show. But first, I want to remind you, in the next hour, I'll be taking your calls, which is something I missed. Something you want to elaborate on, well, give me a ring, 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. I love hearing from you guys, of course, so give us a call right now. And we'll take calls in about 30 minutes. Alrighty. So let's turn to this. I think this is important. I don't think a lot of people are talking about it, but I come from the state of Florida, and I was there front and center when I saw that the census, the 2020 census, was kind of stealing Florida residents, their voices. Ultimately, what was happening was blue states were counting individuals onto their census that shouldn't have been counted in the first place. Now, there was many, many ways that they were inflating the numbers. And obviously, President Trump tried his very best to prevent all of this by requiring it to only count American citizens, but it was a legal battle that those on the left really wanted to draw out. And so now we're kind of learning about the details as to how far those on the left went to steal seats, especially in our House, from American people. And if you live in the state of Florida, you were really the victim on all of this. But there's a massive effort to try to correct the issue. And those over America First Legal are looking to do just that. They just recently filed a lawsuit, and it's on behalf of several Florida groups. And they're looking to correct these issues because, again, these issues are really, really bad. I mean, they were trying to use AI to like algorithms to try to count extra people onto their rolls. I mean, it was really, really bad. The way that they were fabricating the numbers, also really bad. They're detailing it all right now. And also, we covered last week at great length about how Senator Jim Banks was going out there and calling all of this out when he was uncovering all of the theft that was included in all of this. So joining me now to discuss is former Congressman Madison Cawthorn. He is running for Congress again in this great state of Florida. And so it's exciting to have him on the show because he understands the theft of, well, that the left has been trying to do for quite some time now, and it's great to have him on the program. So welcome to the show. I want to talk a little bit about the census because this is an issue that's not getting enough coverage. You know, we saw how they were trying to inflate the numbers of residents living in nursing homes and dormitories on the left, and now they've been able to successfully steal House seats. So your reaction to the fact that AFL is now suing over the matter?
Well, Brianna, let me tell you, it's not just that they're trying to steal Republican seats. It's also that they're stealing literal dollars from the federal government that go to these states. Also, it is just a ridiculous way to try and circumvent what they call democracy, even though we know it, that we live in a republic. But they're trying to circumvent the ability for people to have actual representation in the U.S. House. It should be representative of how many people you have inside of your state, not representative of how creative these Democrat ridiculous socialists are capable of making things look by counting illegal aliens who shouldn't be in our country to begin with and definitely should not have any form of a voice in who gets to represent us. We've lost so many red seats. It's the only reason the Democrats are competitive in the House.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Florida for a bit because everyone's hyper-focused on that because they've been the real victims in all of this. How has the 2020 census affected Florida?
So when you start looking at it, when they came in to count this, obviously you talked about how they were using AI algorithms. They were trying to overcompensate how many people were voted inside of nursing homes, inside of dormitories. But also they worked very hard to make sure that illegal aliens were allowed to be counted inside of this. They were going to house saying how many people live in this home. Then they'd write down how people live in that home. Then they would move on. And obviously, when the illegal aliens are here, many times they'll only live with one legal resident and they'll pack those houses with tons and tons of people. So we've seen the theft of, I think, maybe one, possibly two to three U.S. House seats from the state of Florida, which is a terrible thing. And Governor Ron DeSantis has been really front and center trying to make sure that we have as many red seats as we can have here in the state of Florida. But this is why I'm so thankful that President Trump is being so aggressive when he's going after illegal aliens. I think that it should be even more aggressive. I think we should be getting rid of everybody that's coming into our country that isn't coming through legal means. I would also support, you know, an immigration moratorium until we get all of this sorted out. But people don't understand that there are such narrow margins when it comes to what happens in the U.S. House. You know, there's 435 seats, and it's just based on a simple majority for almost any law to get passed through the House, any bill. And so when you start looking at, oh, well, maybe you just lost two seats. Maybe you lost three seats. And that happens all across the country. But here in the state of Florida, when you lose that many seats, that can be the difference between having Nancy Pelosi or Hakeem Jeffries leading the House or having an America First patriot who wants to fight for us.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think people were paying attention in Texas when Texas was redrawing their congressional maps. And now Florida is on board with all of this. Democrats, though, say that this is a theft of the election process and actually think it's discriminatory. But why would you defend that on your behalf? I guess I should say, why do you defend that?
The reason I defend it is because, listen, if you start looking at all of these blue states that are all around the country, you start seeing how ridiculously gerrymandered they are. And I don't really think that Texas and Florida are trying to gerrymander their districts. I think they're just trying to make it representative of the people that they have. If there are more Republicans in this state than there are Democrats, then absolutely we should have significantly more seats than the other side. You can see what Mark Elias tries doing when he starts trying to literally steal a presidential election. Mark Elias also quarterbacked an effort to try and get me kicked off the ballot in 2022, saying that I was an insurrectionist, quoting some Civil War doctrine inside of that was created for Civil War generals and officers so that they couldn't be in the House. And that's what they tried to do. So when they're trying to say, oh, well, we don't like the fact that you're now only trying to count citizens inside of the U.S. Census, I just call it doesn't snap as pass the sniff test. It's nothing but BS. These people are evil. They hate you. And so whenever they're trying to say, take the moral high ground, saying, oh, you're trying to circumvent the election process, just remember what they did to us in 2020 and what they've been doing to us for decades. Until we had President Trump, no one was calling this out. But trust me, they've been doing this probably since the 1960s.
Yeah, and it's great to see Republicans pushing back finally, because this was an issue that was going on for a very long time and there wasn't really much pushback. Again, he's been the only one really leading the way on that issue, so it's exciting to see. Speaking of that, I think President Trump deserves a lot of credit, because we're going to listen to clip 20 in just a moment. But President Trump has been absolutely massive in the pushback against the left-wing violence that we've seen in this country for over the last few years. I mean, they have just become completely radicalized, and they're using it as a way to, I guess, to try to target conservatives, but also intimidate us. Let's take a listen to what President Trump just said moments ago.
It should be clear to all Americans that we have a very serious left-wing terror threat in our country. Radicals associated with the domestic terror group Antifa that you've heard a lot about lately, and I've heard a lot about them for 10 years. And other far-left extremists have been carrying out a campaign of violence against ICE agents and other officials charged with enforcing federal law.
All right, so let's just be clear. That was yesterday, by the way, when he made those comments. But he has been one of the very few people willing to call it out, and it's become increasingly worse, this violence from those on the left. Who do you blame in all of this? Because Democrats seem to shift the blame when they're confronted with it.
Listen, I blame the left-wing radicals, and I especially blame higher education. You know, if you start looking at recent polling numbers on what political side thinks that violence is an answer to your political woes, the Democrats come out significantly higher on who I think it's almost 13 to 25% of them think that violence is an acceptable answer for disagreements. Also, this is just something that has been going on for a lot longer than people realize. I remember back in, I believe, 2021, Antifa came to my home. They cut little heads out of my campaign signs and put blood down saying, you're next, on my driveway, trying to threaten and intimidate me. But unfortunately for them, Republicans in this generation, we don't back down. We're not afraid of a fight. And they are now registered as a domestic terror organization. They should be hunted down and taken out in every single way that we can. I apologize, ma'am.
Okay.
When we start thinking about what's going on, I mean, we're watching literal asymmetric warfare, civil warfare being carried out all across this country. And now when they're talking about asymmetric warfare, it's when one side is using unusual means. We've seen this starting to escalate ever since from the summer of love with the George Floyd riots, who should never have been venerated, should never have been celebrated. Someone who had an overdose and died while in police custody. They went to war against left-wing cities, started burning down all of these city centers around the country. And now it has culminated in them continuing to ratchet up the pressure, saying that we're fascists, saying that we're trying to overthrow the government, saying that we're violent extremists, all the way to the point that they shot Charlie Kirk because they disagreed with him, because he was effective. And trust me, Charlie Kirk is a moderate compared to the majority of young conservatives in this country. And so if they are willing to shoot him for his beliefs, I promise they're willing to kill you and I. It's time for us to fight back as far as we can.
Yeah, no, it is time for us to fight back, because for a very long time we've kind of just allowed this to happen, and it's unacceptable behavior. And the Charlie Kirk assassination should have woken up most of this country at this point. So yeah, I totally agree on that front. Before you go though, I wanted to ask you about this, because Nick Sorter, he has a show on this network, and it was very upsetting to see him getting assaulted multiple times by Antifa in Portland, but most importantly, he was arrested. And we're learning more and more about potentially how the police department, how they're now being accused of going after, and particularly going after Nick and having him arrested. Let's take a listen to how Nick details all of this in clip 21.
We're trying to figure out who gave the order, because the police that actually arrested me had no idea what was going on. It took them almost an hour to find out what my charges even were. So, I don't think that they were in on it. I think that they were put in a bad situation as well. They were taking orders from somebody higher up, but who that person is to be determined. You know, these people are out there every night screaming, burning things, vandalizing property, assaulting officers, and they are hardly ever arrested. But the day that I get there, a conservative media personality with a camera, I'm the one that gets arrested, and even the DA out there is saying that I should have never been arrested. You know, something stinks out there in Portland. Like, I went out there to expose the police department and the fact that they're allowing their city mm-hmm. to turn into a terrorist hellhole almost, but run by Antifa. And they made my job a hell of a lot easier by arresting me at this point because they've exposed themselves. Millions and millions of people are now paying attention to this story out there in Portland.
Well, it's a heck of a story that you've got to tell, and I know you've been telling it to the president in the next few minutes. I know that you've got to get inside the White House, so we'll let you do that.
All right, so it's great, obviously, to see Nick talking about all of this, but Portland police have a lot of questions that need to be answered. What was your reaction when you saw what happened with Nick, him getting arrested? Because when an independent journalist is arrested for doing his job, and he's also assaulted several times, on our end, we're deeply concerned. But what were your thoughts about the footage?
Listen, well, first off, we have to think back to when Nick Sorter ran out and saved that American flag from being burnt. That was a heroic move that he knew was probably going to draw a lot of negative attention, but he was willing to do it because he loves his country. Nick is a patriot. And so to see people trying to silence his First Amendment right to be able to go out and document what's going on, to speak out against the radical violence that's going on in this country, to see them trying to actually silence them, to use government force to take them on, that's exactly what, I mean, as everyone since Rush Limbaugh to Charlie Kirk to President Trump to people like you, to people like me, we have been warning this is the direction the left is going in for a very long time. The left does not care about open debate. They only care about open debate when they think that they have the facts on their side. But now that we've become organized, we've become shrewd, we're willing to fight back, they don't want to have open debate. They don't want to take us on policy and issues. You saw this during the 2024 election when they refused to start doing debates because they knew they were going to lose. Now, the problem is when you stop being able to use the First Amendment to be able to discuss our issues that's going on, that's when violence starts occurring. And we have got to stay away from having kinetic force draw out inside this country. It would be terrible. And so that's why we're calling on the radical left-wing Democrats to start being willing to have a conversation, be willing to have an open debate. Sure, you're going to lose because your side's idiotic and stupid, but at least it's a better alternative instead of having left-wing radicals order their Gestapo to go out and start arresting journalists. That is what terrible, terrible dictator states start doing. And listen, I don't blame most of the rank and file police, even as Nick Sorter was starting to state inside of his interview. He doesn't think that the police officers even knew what was going on. This is a top-down issue. When we start looking at Democratic leadership, realize they don't have any values. Their only value is attaining power. They'll do it by any means necessary, even if that means arresting journalists. And so, Brianna, that even starts calling out people in your profession to start being worried that these people are going to start coming for you. And I know that you're aware of that, but I feel like too many people on the right and the older generation don't understand what's going on. You know, they often say, we don't want to rock the boat too much. We don't want to be too aggressive. The boat is sinking. They're currently arresting journalists as we speak. They're resorting to violence. And if you start trying to call out that violence, they'll arrest you for it. That is the message that we're getting from Portland. And that is the message that needs to resonate with the Republicans all across this country.
Yeah, we saw Barack Obama spying on journalists during his time in the White House. And we also saw Joe Biden going after journalists as well, trying to find out who their sources were. So again, this is a major issue. And if we continue to allow it, it will only get increasingly worse. So we're hopeful that Nick is about to set the tone on all of this and push back. And we're excited that President Trump, even having this roundtable, will instill some fear into these people who want to prevent independent journalists from doing their job. But speaking of that, you know, before you go, I wanted to talk to you because about specifically your announcement that you made earlier this month. You announced that you're running for Congress in the 19th Florida Congressional District, which is obviously held currently by Byron Donalds. You are looking to represent those great people over there. I loved going over there to see the table, to all of those great business owners over there and talking and meeting with them. It's an incredible district. Why did you throw your hat into this race, though?
Well, listen, you know, I moved here several years ago, been here almost half a decade. I love this area. And, you know, I've got some major issues that I want to tackle. You know, one is really much, very much so a national issue. Because of the violence we're starting to see, because of the extremism we're starting to see come out of the left-wing radicals, I think that we need to be so shrewd and aggressive. We need to pull these people out root and stem. Their ideology needs to be systematically targeted and completely destroyed. We need to show how morally and intellectually bankrupt it is so that people in these blue hellholes inside of these cities all around this country are starting to say, wait a minute, these people are evil. These people don't represent me. We need to get them out of power. And then you're not going to have radical stuff happening, like trying to miscount a census so you can circumvent the American people's voices. You know, after that, I really want to tackle home prices in this country. I think if we go after the EPA for their ridiculous mandates that they have on home building products, we could bring the cost of building homes down. And then after that, you know, I'm majority, I would say I'm about 60% of conservative, then about 40% of populist. And so I believe in conservative doctrine, but I'm willing to go outside of conservative doctrine to make sure this economy works for the American people and for people in my generation. So many people have been absolutely pushed out of being able to own a home inside of this country. And one of those reasons is because flood insurance is so ridiculously high here in the state of Florida. Insurance across this country is so ridiculously high. There's a couple reasons for that. One is because we don't allow real competition in the insurance market, whether that's healthcare or whether that's home insurance. But also in places like the state of Florida, where flood insurance is so ridiculously high, and that's because we have so many outrageous storms that hit this area all the time. And now you and I both know that probably those storms are caused instead of just naturally occurring. But I believe that with what's going on, we need to have some kind of a tax rebate that goes back to American citizens so they can afford to own homes inside of our beautiful states, places like Florida here in Southwest Florida.
Yeah, I mean, Madison, I'm glad you're calling that out, because I lived in Florida for, I think, 6 years. And anytime it rained, the sewage would always clog up instantly, and it would create all these floods. And I'm like, at what point do we say we've got a lot of issues here, and it's not a natural occurrence when it comes to bad sewage and other features as well, thanks to the government. So again, yeah, I would say that this is a big issue, and it's one worth fighting for, because so many people who live in Florida are really upset with the insurance issue right now, because insurance companies are fleeing the state, and I understand why. I understand both sides of it. So we're excited to see you in this fight. I want to thank you for joining the program today. We wish you the very best, and we look forward to possibly having you soon back on the show. So thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely, Brianna. Thank you so much, and thanks for fighting for this country. Have a great one.
Thank you. And thank you as well. We're excited to have you hopefully back in D.C. fighting for this country. I think, though, you are the clear winner, my friend. So thank you so much. All right, folks, I want to remind our audience that we will be taking calls in just a few minutes. So give me a ring, 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you. I know our calls are blowing up right now, and we look forward to taking those calls in just a few moments. But there's a lot going on in the world, and if you're ready to sound off, give me a ring. All right, so I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about what's going on in Virginia, because there's a candidate running right now for AG in Virginia. You may have heard Jay Jones. He's running as a Democrat. We talked about on this program how there's text messages of him getting very excited about putting a bullet or suggesting there should be a bullet put in one of the speaker's heads and going after his kids. Like, it was very egregious text messages, but it's not enough to completely disassociate him from those on the left. People like Nancy Pelosi aren't going to sacrifice this candidate and say, we should probably replace him because he's very, very violent, obviously, through these text messages. But we're going to listen to clip 22, because Pelosi, instead of condemning it, really seems to just say, well, he's the best we got. And then she makes it all about herself. Take a listen.
There is a Democrat running for attorney general who's embroiled in a scandal over text messages in which he, the Democrat, said that the GOP speaker of the House of Delegates should get two bullets to the head for how he paid tribute to a former moderate Democratic lawmaker who died. He has apologized. Should he get out of the race?
Well, that's up to the people, the leaders in Virginia. They have said he has apologized. What I understand is they say that on balance he's the better person to be attorney general. But that's up to them. But I wish there would be enough fuss of all the times that people have said they were going to put a bullet in my head right in public.
To be clear, Pelosi, and violence is obviously unacceptable, especially the threat of violence, but Pelosi has fired up the hatred within her party and used that to go after President Trump. Okay, so it's very, very clear what she's trying to do. She's trying to play the victim here. She's trying to validate why Democrats really shouldn't throw this guy under the bus. Under their own rules, this candidate is disqualified from holding office, the highest office when it comes to abiding by the law in Virginia. This is the best the left has. Talking about a guy who's talking openly about putting bullets in his political enemies. This is the best you got? Well, I guess it just highlights where Democrats are nowadays. They don't have much in the way of good quality candidates. So all they have at this point are those who are mentally ill, those who are unhinged, And those who are looking to run the highest office when it comes to following the law. This is the best Democrats have. And she's just openly telling you that. When she says it, listen, not getting any better for those on the left. They don't run on actual policies. They instead run on emotion, lies, and fear. That's all they have. They just propped up their only candidate right now that they think is acceptable for Virginia AG. And she's openly telling you that. This is the best we got. Now, if you live in Virginia, you probably should be asking yourself, is this the best Virginia truly has? I guess the voters will be deciding that very, very soon. All right, let's partially listen to a little bit of a brush up between Hakeem Jeffries and Mike Lawler. Now, Mike Lawler is he's a Republican from New York. I would refer to him as a rhino, but he is trying to create a name for himself. And obviously, Hakeem Jeffries is not a very bright man. Let's take a listen to clip 9.
I voted for a tax cut bill that gave the largest tax cut to Americans in history, including, by the way, the average New Yorker getting a $4,000 tax cut. Are you against that?
You're embarrassing
yourself
right now.
Do you want to cut the standard deduction in half?
The largest cut to Medicaid in American history. You voted for that.
Fraud and abuse, by the way.
You voted
Tom DiNapoli, the Democratic controller of New York.
Let me ask you a question.
Pointed out that $1.2 billion were wasted.
Listen, you're not going to talk to me.
Fraud.
And talk over me.
And non-New York residents.
Because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't you just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you showed up.
Is that the way to talk?
You showed up.
Yeah,
I got to be honest with you. If anyone told me to keep my mouth shut, I'd probably smack him across their face. The fact that Mike Lawler has not responded that way, it's quite interesting. We all come from New York. You got anger issues sometimes. But the reality of it is this, folks. Democrats think they could talk to you however they want, and you just have to shut up and listen. No. We don't have to shut up and listen. You see, these people are trying to trade our country in for foreigners, and they want you just to comply and put up with it. See, there are some Republicans who do have a spine, and they are no longer going to be allowing it, and they're not going to allow Democrats to use our money to shift over to insurance policies to cover illegal aliens' health care. You see, our taxpayer money goes to Americans first. That's exactly why President Trump was, in fact, elected president. People have had enough of this. People have had enough of this, and they're tired of being lectured by these Democrats who think they're smarter than us, better than us, and they understand policy better than us. Their policies have failed in other countries. Failed. And so the people who keep pushing this, you have to wonder. You have to wonder, do you hate this country enough, and that's the reason why you're doing all of this? Now, listen, I don't like the federal government, and I would say probably not a bad idea to see a shakedown with the shutdown. But the reality also is that our service members are going to be in a really bad situation in just a matter of days. Democrats have a very clear decision to make. Do they pick illegal aliens over our veterans? Well, if they decide to continue the shutdown, I could promise you that it will not go well for them in the midterms. The American people will take it out on them. So many veterans right now are barely living. They're paycheck to paycheck, and if they don't get paid, they will be at the food banks looking for donations. And it's not acceptable that we allow this to happen in our country. It's time now for Democrats to pick their side. Are you with the American people or the invaders? All right, we're going to be taking your calls in just a few moments. Give me a ring, 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. We look forward to hearing from you in just a moment.
Feel the unstoppable power of Alex Jones, fueled by Ultimate Creatine Powder. This is the secret weapon behind his relentless energy. Creatine monohydrate ignites his muscles, blasting through lefts and sprints with raw warrior strength, building the physique of a true patriot. With micronized mixability, Alex dominates every day, recovering like a titan to crush fatigue and soar to new heights of performance. His mind becomes a fortress, sharper focus, unbreakable memory, powered by creatine to outlast any mental battle. This nootropic powerhouse defends against fatigue, keeping Alex Jones razor sharp for the fight. Join him and unleash your inner strength. Grab Ultimate Creatine Powder now at thealexjonesstore.com. Fuel your fight and rise with Alex Jones today.
That's pure gold. I'd have in between, like, maybe the creatine zooming in a little. It's coming towards you. But also, since there's 30 seconds left, you'd have me go, baka chaka woom bok, quack, quack, kong, whatever. You know, that little, like, ooga chaka munga bok, woom kong kong. That'd be really good.
If there's something that we talked about on the show and you'd like to elaborate on, give me a call. We're opening up the lines to all of you. We're going to stay on topic, of course, with what we've discussed today. So there's something maybe I missed that you'd like to discuss, maybe a little bit of a challenge, a pushback. Give me a ring, 877-789-2539. I'm excited to hear from all of you, of course. We've had an incredible show thus far, so I look forward to the calls. We're also going to be speaking to a mortician who has a lot to say in regards to Charlie Kirk's assassination. She's been doing the digging into the footage, and she's got a lot to tell us about what we've learned thus far. So a lot more happening in the third hour of the program. We're excited that you're all here with us today. If you haven't done so already, give me a ring, of course, because we'll be taking your calls in a moment. But there's some breaking news coming from the best state, I would say, in the country. A little biased, though, these days. Texas, because we have the best attorney general that you're actually ever going to find in this country, and that is Attorney General Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton has been the only one aggressively pushing back against those who are trying to come for your kids. And we're very thankful for that. He has just announced, I just got the announcement now, that the AG has brought in his investigation under Securing Children Online through Parental Empowerment Act. Now, he is targeting the online chat platform Discord, according to the press release that was just sent my way. This follows its use of, obviously, allegedly being used in the Charlie Kirk assassination. Now, they're alleging, of course, based on the reports, that it was used afterwards, not prior. We're still waiting for the investigation to kind of disclose and clarify those details. But he wants to learn more as to how Discord is being used to go after children. And that's very, very interesting. We actually covered it earlier on the show as well, that there are Nigerian scammers going after kids online, and they are sextorting them. That's a term you probably have never heard of before, because it is, I'd say, within the last maybe two decades, something that's new, but most people don't want to talk about it. But they're targeting teens, and specifically, because BBC actually did, I'll give credit when credit's due, they did an incredible package and news package on this, where they detailed as to who's doing it. They even spoke to one Nigerian man who openly said that he's got no regrets. And he, in fact, doesn't even have any empathy for the children he's targeting online. And so Ken Paxton really just getting front and center on that issue and trying to his very best to protect the children here in Texas. Again, Discord, they were supposed to, I don't know what ever happened to it. They were supposed to appear in front of Congress this week. Maybe they picked a different date. But again, they need to be answering these questions. Now, again, it's a massive platform. You can't sit there and attribute everything to the actual company itself, and I get that. But, folks, when you know that pedophiles are utilizing your platform to target children and you also happen to be a platform that's used for gaming, you better do everything in your power to protect these children. The amount of online predators who are going out there and targeting kids is something that should be in the front of every American's minds. And in fact, a lot of people don't even want to talk about it. I remember pitching stories like this when I worked in corporate news, and they just never wanted to talk about it because they thought it was so depressing. But what's even more depressing is when you don't talk about it and these children feel alone. I mean, the numbers of how many kids have committed suicide from sextortion are heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. Dozens of kids taking their own lives because they don't know what to do. And it's strange because it's becoming very common. I was talking to someone yesterday and they were telling me how they were just simply at a bar having a conversation. And then the person they were sitting next to told them, yeah, one of my loved ones was actually extorted online through all of this. So again, this is a much bigger issue, but I think most Americans are just truly embarrassed to bring it up. And so we're excited that Ken Paxton is taking on this fight. And that's why it's so important that we make sure that whoever takes over for Ken Paxton, Aaron Wrights, is a fighter. We had Aaron Wrights in studio, by the way. He is someone who is being backed by Ken Paxton. And that's because Ken knows he's a fighter and he's going to continue to carry on these fights. And we do hope he wins his primary. All right, we got a lot to unpack in the next hour, obviously. So don't go anywhere. Give us a call, 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. We're staying on topic. Was there something we discussed that you maybe want to dive into a little bit deeper? Give me a ring.
Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. It is I, Brianna Morello, the host of American Journal. We're excited that you're all here today. All right, I'm a bit of a dork, but we're going to dive into a bunch of topics in just a few moments. Give me a ring, 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. We're staying on topic. If there's a story that we talked about in the program that you want to talk about a little bit more, give me a ring. We'll do just that. We're going to go down the call list, of course. And the first person who called in today is the one we're going to go with first, which is Savage Dog from Georgia, and he's with us today. Welcome back to the program, my friend. How are you doing?
Good morning, ma'am. How are you today? I'm blessed.
Yes, same here. Same here. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, so we're happy about that.
Well, my initial premise, I was mistaken. You mentioned at the beginning of the show talking about the government shutdown's going to, I thought you meant service members, going to hurt service members and they're going to starve. But then you clarified it before one of the last breaks and said no veterans. But I can speak to both. First of all, for service members, I was an active duty Marine in the 90s when we had the big shutdown and I missed a paycheck or two. But the chow hall never shut down. That being said, they did serve rabbit one day in the chow hall. Yeah, you heard me right. Rabbit. Yeah, we lost a little bit of beer money back then, but so far as eating, no, we ate. But for veterans, I'm disabled, so I get a check, but it's once a month, like on the first of the month. So the the 15th doesn't bother me if it's shut down. I don't know of any other services that would cause a veteran to not get paid for something. So I can't really speak to that. Mm-hmm. But the only thing I can speak to with authority is that your service member is not going to starve. They'll figure they just got to go to the chow hall. Well, instead of getting paid and going to Taco Bell or whatever.
Yeah, Taco Bell sounds a little bit better than rabbits. I'd probably go there first. But I wanted to actually – so I did speak to a DoD official today to kind of understand what the shutdown means for those who are serving. And let me just kind of read from the message so I don't misinterpret it. It says, in 6 days, our troops won't be paid. And then it says that it pains us, obviously, to potentially see military families at our food banks. So I think that's where their clarification is on all of that. So they have about 6 days, it looks like, for this shutdown to carry on before it actually starts to affect them. That's according to someone high up in DOD right now who is just trying to keep their eyes on it and trying to make sure that this ends quickly. But I mean, if you're someone who's serving our country or has served our country, now you get to see it. It's clear as day. Are Democrats going to pick illegal aliens over them? I mean, Savage Dog, I'll let you kind of wrap that up, but I think that this is clear that they are going to have to now make it very public that if they continue to carry on the shutdown, that they're picking illegal aliens over their own.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, if you're in the service, if you're active duty, you do get paid twice a month, right? Mm-hmm. So in the middle and the last. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that is going to affect married service members, because they can go to the chow hall, but again, this is the 90s. I don't know what has changed since then, mm-hmm. but I don't know if they'll allow family, or I don't think they did, or I know they didn't, but I don't know what kind of contingency plan they have, but I know they have billions of freaking MREs, and it, you know, so if it comes down to it, you know, eat the MRE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is speculation on my part. All I can speak of with facts is what happened to me in the 90s as a single active duty member. I ate at the chow hall, and there was no shortage of food. It just wasn't steak and lobster like M Air Force boys get. So I really don't know as far as like a family, if you're getting a check. If you're in a family, you get a basic allowance for quarters, mm-hmm. I think is what it's called, where you get, if you're living off base, then you get like money for rent, and then you get like basically what you could equate to food stamps, which they'll give you a food stipend. And I don't know if that will be affected by the shutdown, and if it does, what they're going to do, but I'm sure they have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Well, not sure, but I, you know, like, surely they got a plan, that kind of sure.
Yeah.
So talk to your DOD guy and get some clarification, because I really don't want our side going on the scare tactic that the left does. And that's what it kind of sounded like to me, like, you know, oh, my God, our people are going to starve, and they're going to be like the Viet Cong, having to only eat like a ration of rice a day. And No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thanks for calling in. I will clarify on that. I'll probably have it to you by tomorrow at least. So we'll continue on that, and I'll bring you the very most updated information. That doesn't even make any sense, but I'll bring you the most updated information possible. Jefferson in Virginia, I hear you have more to add to that discussion. So welcome back to the show, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Brianna. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning.
Yeah, the payroll thing with the government employees, it's not about food. It's about making payments on your bills while your income is interrupted. I just don't understand why the private sector hasn't figured it. As often as we go into these government shutdowns where people aren't getting paid when they're supposed to, you know, direct deposit stops and all that sort of stuff, it's just amazing they don't step in and loan these people money at interest, and then the government should have to pay the interest because the person receiving the loan didn't create the situation where they didn't get their paycheck. They're going to get their back pay. They can pay back the principal, but the interest should be paid by the government when the shutdown is finally over. This should be a simple mechanism that kicks in anytime they shut down the government. People should still get paid. It's just stupid to make the populace that works in the federal government suffer temporarily, not getting their normal payments, and still have to go into work. You know, it's crazy. It's a sort of a slave mentality. But I just don't understand that we don't. Yeah, we do this constantly, year after year after year, to federal employees, and there's never any mechanism to deal with the shortfall that is temporary. And of course, they'll get back pay eventually. But, you know, just this inconvenience of not having payments made on time hurts people.
Yeah.
And there's a solution where, you know, the private sector should say, all right, we'll cover payroll for the 3 months that the government shut down, and the interest will be paid to us by the government that created the problem in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think that they intentionally do it, though, because they know it pulls at the heartstrings of Americans and allows them to push forward any type of funding that might be controversial. And they could just do it on the backs of, oh, we have to do this because look at all these people that will go hungry or will miss payments or at risk of losing their homes. And I think that's probably the reason why they do it. So Jefferson, I want to thank you for calling and adding to the discussion on that front, because I think it's important. And again, tomorrow I'll have an update when I reach out again to the DOD official I was speaking with to get you all of that. I want to turn over though the discussion to, let's see, Andrew's next in line. Andrew in New Jersey. Welcome to the show, my friend.
That is Savage Dog. Thank you for your service. And I wanted to talk about the LGBTQ and the churches, but also quick, about, you know, the safety and the roundtable for independent journalists. I was working with the New York Post, and I was threatened, but first with the LGBTQ, by the Palestinian protesters, not Antifa, who would wear masks sometimes. But everyone agrees, theologian or Christian, anti-Christian, that the Bible teaches against homosexuality, which I don't teach or, you know, I disagree with. But when they're going to pretend that Jesus doesn't teach that, then they lose their credibility. So it's like, okay, if I want to marry a man, I can. But if I commit adultery on that man, then I'm breaking Jesus' law. So they're making a mockery, and it's already something that people see as superstitious a lot. So they're just undermining, like, oh, so Jesus was lying when he taught that? Or so what do I get? Do I decide what I get to follow? I don't want to pay my taxes, so can I disregard that? So they're just making a mockery out of it. But I had a cool story with the New York Post and the Palestinian protesters. They threatened me. It's funny because I could have kicked their ass, but there were three of them, and one had his face covered, and you see just his eyes. But he was really skinny, and he was wearing big, thick glasses. So I was thinking, you're not tough, like, with those glasses. But they were saying, oh, accusing me of being Jewish, and which I'm not Jewish, and they lecture, you're not a real Jew because you're not Hasidic. But I finally convinced them that I'm not Jewish. And you probably never had those thoughts out in the field, but I was thinking who I was going to hit first. Should I hit the one that's running his mouth off, doing all the talking, or should I hit the one behind me, like hovering behind me with his face? Should I hit one guy hard, boom, or should I do quick two punch, get two of them? But we shouldn't have to think of that. But they shouldn't be allowed to mask their face with just their eyes showing. But quick with legalized marijuana, because I was in the court then, the Southern District, where one of their friends was being arraigned for attacking a Jewish guy that was on crutches. It was a big story. And I saw them. They were like, look for Palestinian people. Which is awkward because you're sitting there like stereotyped. Then I saw young guys with Free Palestine shirts. Mm-hmm. So I told them I work with the New York Post, and they were livid like the other guys. They're like, the Post is the worst. And I said, but I'm not going to misquote you. And they were like high on marijuana because I walked out with them and they were smoking weed. So the weed totally made them calm. But I won them over,
yeah.
Both the threatening ones, because I listened to them and heard their side of the story.
Well, I think, and Andrew, nobody really probably listened to them in the first place. So I'm sure they were, like, super just happy that somebody was. Because, again, I mean, and this is going to be fun to watch as we sit. And, by the way, Andrew, thank you for calling in. It's going to be fun to sit back and watch because when these lefties find out that Donald Trump was the one who freed Palestine, they're going to have to start calling him Daddy Trump soon. So I'd like to get their reaction. I'd actually invite them on the show and to get their reaction to all of that. But I want to thank Andrew for calling in. Of course, all right, Chris in Florida, I want to turn to you because I feel like you have a lot on your mind as well. So thank you for calling in today.
Hi. Yes, Brianna, great job. Glad to have you on the America Journal. What are you, breath of fresh air? Not dissing Harrison at all. He's doing great on the war room. I just want to commend your entire crew. I actually sat in your chair back in April of 2022 during a one-hour it was a fundraising marathon, and it was from a 5 to 6 a.m. plug. I worked with Rob to get on there, and I co-hosted Alex's show back in 2013. So I know all of your what goes on with you guys, and you do an amazing job day in and day out. A lot of people don't appreciate that. I've been part of the 1% that supports you through your store for the last 3.5 years. Just got done downing 10 ounces of Methylene Blue. It's amazing. Anyway. Real quick comment. Madison Cawthorn, even though I live in Annapolina Luna's district, I'm going to be driving down a couple of times, see if I can help him out in his campaign. I want to let your listeners know this is the tip of the spear. These are the people that we need back in Congress. And Byron's doing a great job, but it looks like he's going to climb the ladder and possibly be our next governor. And we need somebody to fill in that vacuum, his space, and I think Madison's going to do a great job. One last request, Brianna. Can I do a plug for a film? We're going to do a screening. I've got to fly over Sunday morning in Dallas for your listeners. Would you mind?
Yeah, give it a go.
Can I do a quick plug?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It was our Oklahoma City bombing documentary. I was one of the producers and did the voiceover. We're having a screening at the Angelica Film Center on Mockingbird Lane. It's at 5 o'clock this coming Sunday. Jesse Trenadu, attorney, his brother was brutally murdered. Mistaken identity for one of McVeigh's accomplices. He's going to be on the speaker panel. I've been asked to participate. All right, I'll shut up and let your other listeners get in. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate you giving us that update, as well as the shout-out for our crew, because our crew is the best. I worked at several different media outlets, and they all suck. They all suck. But this is a great crew that they have here over at InfoWars. We're very grateful for all of them, of course. All right, let's turn to our next caller, Bentley in South Carolina. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm currently working right now, so I'll keep it real short and simple. But I just wanted to touch base earlier on what you said about the state of South Carolina not really producing too many great politicians, which unfortunately I have to agree with you. But there is a gentleman named Mark Lynch, and he's actually been on the program once before, hosted, I think, did an interview with Harrison Smith. Mm-hmm. And he is challenging Lindsey Graham's Senate seat. He's put $5 million of his own money into the campaign. He's a businessman. He's a native South Carolinian from the upstate. He's got a lot of traction. And I just want to encourage anybody who's listening, who lives in the state of South Carolina, to definitely vote for this man so that we can actually get rid of this liberal Lindsey Graham once and for all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been bad. He's been very bad. And the fact that listening to the soundbite had me fired up, because I lack empathy for the guy, because he sat back and watched as American citizens were targeted by the government, and he had no issue there, but he thought that if he played footsie with those on the left, that he was going to somehow buy his own immunity. So I like that suggestion. I want to thank you for calling, especially when you're at work. We appreciate when you do just that, so thank you. All right, let's turn to our next caller. Marcus, welcome to the show. I see you want to talk about violence, so what's on your mind?
Yeah, Brianna, I heard you say violence is never the answer. I really want to refute that statement. I think it's a problem with our society.
Mm-hmm.
When you have children, you've got to punish them. I mean, when it comes down to it, they've done wrong. They've got to learn their lesson. And so sometimes the belt is the best way to teach that child not to do that again. And so there is a place for violence in our society. And to try to wipe out violence is absolutely the wrong way. We become way too civilized, and then we get people like Antifa, which take over because everybody says violence is not the answer, and then they go ahead and have these fireworks. Where the hell did they get the fireworks from anyway? That are huge and blowing up people, and that the police just take their hands off. I mean, it's really messing up society. I mean, back in the 60s, there was violence. You were allowed to spank your kid, and we had people grow up to be responsible adults. We still get responsible adults, but I'm just pushing back against that idea that violence is never the answer.
Yeah, well, I think disciplining your children isn't violence. I wouldn't classify it. I don't think that's violence at all. I think that's probably the best way to parent. So for that, I wouldn't argue on that. I don't consider it violence. I would say violence is different, though, than self-defense, right? Because I think when we're talking about Antifa and they're attacking us, and then you have to defend yourself, I don't consider that to be violence. I consider that to be self-defense. So in my mind, there are two separate issues. But you never want to be the first one to throw the punch in that type of a political spectrum, I guess I would say. I'd argue against political violence and being the first ones to go out there and do something. But I'd say if you have to defend yourself, absolutely should. Absolutely. I mean, all these Antifa terrorists who are taking over our cities and are trying their best to intimidate people or intimidate those who are going to Turning Point events, it's unacceptable. And if they hit first, you hit back. I mean, I grew up and we were disciplined as children, of course, but the rule of thumb was always don't throw the first punch, but if they do something, you better go for it. And so I think that's really important for Americans to understand that self-defense is fine. I don't have a problem with that. And we saw the video of Nick, I think it was the second time he was assaulted, the gang of them going after him, but Nick was ready to defend himself. And I think that's the difference. And I think that's how it should be on that front. But violence is, I don't think self-defense is violence. I don't know about you, Marcus. I'll let you answer on that one.
It depends. I mean, And what I find is the problem is that the police feel that any type of threat whatsoever is violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a society that has fallen down the wrong path. When we continue on down that, we just become, we keep all of our stuff in rather than letting it out. We've got to let things out, and it becomes healthy when you let things out. If you keep everything in, then it creates people which just explode. Yeah. And we see that all over our society.
Yeah.
That's what I'm fighting. I mean, that's what I'm trying to talk against.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. And I agree with you. Thank you for calling, Marcus. We appreciate it. I want to get to Tom, because Tom, you want to talk about the California fires and the person they have just recently arrested for that. So what's your take on all of it?
Well, it sounds like to me, Brianna, by the way, you're doing a great job, young lady.
Thank you.
You don't need to sit on that pillow. You're an intellectual giant. So pull that pillow out from underneath you, girl. You don't need that.
Thank you.
Sounds like to me what has happened is basically they've caught their patsy. Because Alex talked about it yesterday, there's aerial footage of plain, honest, truthful fact. They never did cut the brush back from the power lines.
Mm-hmm.
California law states that they must cut it back when the winds reach 40 miles an hour. They didn't even cut it back when it reached 80 miles an hour. And then they said they turned the power off, which they didn't because, again, the aerial footage shows the power lines whipping into the trees. And it's setting off sparks. And what really boils me is they say this guy started this fire a week prior, and it took it a week to cook. No, this guy is a patsy. This is basically California government covering its tracks because they know they've done wrong. They emptied a 75-million-gallon reservoir 2 weeks before the fires broke out. And then when they tried to use the agricultural reserves, it was gone as well. No, Brianna, this thing stinks from the top down. There needs to be some governmental investigations on this because I'm not buying the story. When Alex broke it yesterday, I didn't buy it. I don't buy it today.
Yeah, I'd say you're about right on that front. And thank you for calling in because my gut told me, let's listen into the press conference yesterday. Let's see what happens. Let's see what the complaint was. And it just doesn't seem to stick. I don't like it so far. So thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. We're all with you on that one. Let's get to our last caller because we've only got 2 minutes left. I want to turn to Jeff because, Jeff, I hear there's a lot on your mind.
Yeah, hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I see and hear things that aren't there, you know, and sometimes there's like this cosmic static that's screaming my name. So, and I feel like it's in the walls, you know, and so there's it's definitely spiders and they're spinning webs and they're lying and they're whispering in tongues that taste kind of like burnt cinnamon sometimes a little bit and also regret. And I saw them last night. They were crawling through the static of my television screen, which hasn't actually worked since the moon turned purple in 1997. And they told me that the government's replaced my teeth with microchips, if you can believe that. And that they're broadcasting my thoughts to a satellite, which is orbiting Pluto. And Pluto's not a planet, they say. I know better. It's a prison for the shadow gods and the ones who control the stock market with their lizard tails. And the refrigerator, I noticed, is humming in Morse code. It's Morse code.
Jeff,
Morse
I feel
code.
Like you're pranking me.
But it's not my soul. And it's there. It's
Jeff.
It's trapped in ice cubes. Screaming, and I drank one once, and it tasted like my childhood dog Rufus, who ran away when the
Jeff,
sky cracked open.
And
spilled syrup on their neighbors, and they never noticed, but I did, and I saw the syrup pool in their eyes, turning them into puppets of the cloud people in the cloud.
We need UFO music.
And compressed memories of everything on a Tuesday. And I tried to tell the mailman this, but he's one of them, and his hat's too perfect, too crisp, and that like it's made of origami nightmares, and that he hands letters.
Jeff, you are quite impressive, my friend. You know, I know a lot of you complain about me talking really fast, but Jeff just outdid me, and I didn't think that was possible. Jeff must have roots to Long Island, maybe. Sounds like a New Yorker. You can only talk that fast if you drink in the water in Long Island. There's other problems, obviously, as you could tell when you drink the water in Long Island, but definitely talking fast is what gets you with that tap water. Thanks for calling, Jeff. We appreciate your time, of course. We appreciated everyone who was calling in. We are out of time, but I love taking these calls. I love speaking to you, so thanks for that. All right, don't go anywhere. We got a lot to discuss in the next half of the program. I'm going to be talking about Charlie Kirk, and we're going to kind of go through what we know, what we don't know with an incredible mortician, so don't go anywhere.
is how did you wind up knowing Alex Jones?
It was his early videos. It was his early documentaries. It was the stuff he produced himself, like on VHS. I watched that documentary. I'd been, you know, a fan of Alex's early stuff. And that's, you know, just him.
So you knew who he was on 9/11?
Yeah.
You were on a radio show and you talked about 9/11, and you have, is it a theory or you just don't believe the government account of what happened on 9/11?
I just had questions.
Yeah.
I had a lot of questions. And the forum I chose to voice those questions in is the Alex Jones radio show. Mm-hmm. And just because he's a guy that I've been a fan of and followed for a lot of years.
He's my friend. I would mean no disrespect. I love him. He's coming here in a month. But I'd never heard of Alex Jones on 9/11. It's interesting that you have long felt like you want to look at other sources of information.
Of course. Yeah. I've always done my own research. Always. I've got to believe that the Pentagon is the most protected and documented, video protected, surveilled building in the history of the known universe, right?
Turns out not.
Well, I'm saying
I think we just have one two videos help. From the parking lot.
Kiosk. Yeah.
And then that is weird, isn't it?
Yeah. And then Building 7. It's just you can't. You can't watch that and say that is the result of a fire that burned for 5 hours on two floors. You can't sell that to me. And you know, that for years that was always met with that is disrespecting the victims.
They are hurting the victims' families, the survivors, because they continue to raise this preposterous notion that the United States government would be so hideously manipulative that we would kill almost 3,000 of our own citizens as a pretext to going to war in Afghanistan.
How is that disrespecting the fallen heroes? How? If you're just looking for the truth behind what is clearly not how it was explained.
It was if they had detonated. They were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
So that's how I met Alex. I said, hi, Alex. I'm a fan for years. I said, we have to talk. 0 hour is upon us. And he called in 10 minutes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then flew out to see you.
Yeah. And then we thought, okay, let's build a secret weapon. Let's do something that like is unique. So we got together and we wrote this piece called 20 Minutes with the President.
20 Minutes with the President.
We drilled down into the 20 things that were really bulletproof. Really bulletproof. But Alex said they're just going to paint you as crazy.
Of course.
And I said, really? That's like, they can't get more creative than that? He says, no, they're just going to call you crazy. And smash cut to like a week later. And it was Bill O'Reilly and it was Geraldo. And they just dismissed me in one sentence. Well, Charlie Sheen's obviously crazy.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone can find that clip, I'm sure.
Charlie Sheen continues to say the U.S. government knew about 9/11 before it happened.
It's one of these things like Area 51 with the aliens in New Mexico. No matter how you define it, they
Sheen
still believe.
Is crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think
he's crazy.
I think that he has a trick gene or a screw loose.
Personally, I wanted to create a public document specifically rooted in fact. If anybody dares question that, I would encourage those people to scrutinize it, to research it. The truth is unchanging, Alex, as we both know.
And I was always amazed to see that you always had hard data to back up your claims.
In the info war.
In the info war.
With us right now. All right. You know, I was sitting back yesterday watching InfoWars, and Alex actually did a great interview. Patrick Bet-David came on the show, and he had a lot to say in regards to Charlie Kirk's assassination. Now, I know a lot of people have more questions than answers because yet we haven't seen the autopsy, but I think he made a great point as to why so many people, number one, I mean, we really don't trust our government, and you shouldn't, of course, but how
Cell phones and other cameras have completely made this a game changer when it comes to controlling the narrative. Take a listen.
60 years ago, if the government wanted to hide and tell us who shot John F. Kennedy, you could get away with it. 40 years ago, you could get away with it. Maybe 24 years ago, you can't get away with it. You can't get away with it today. Today, it's very different. We still don't know what happened with Butler, but today's a lot more difficult. Why? You have 3,500 students that are like this, recording everything. All it's going to take a few days for us to be able to take a camera and zoom in. I don't know if you saw the most recent Apple commercial where it shows this is the new Apple 17 iPhone. You know who that's a terrible news for? All of these government institutions that maybe are trying to hide something, because you can zoom in so closely and it's crystal clear quality. Technology is getting better. A few months back, Larry Ellison said the fact that we're going to get to a point that cameras going to be everywhere. Bad guys won't be able to do anything because we'll be able to see their behaviors, all this other stuff. The reality of it is, flip it around. This is preventing, some may say, the OG bad guys to not be able to get away with anything, which is what? The government that tries to hide stories from us.
Yeah, and the government's hidden a lot of murders and assassinations from the American people. And so I think it's okay to ask questions. But let's get to some of the facts. I think that's what we really have to focus on. So joining me now to discuss is Lauren, the mortician, and she's done an incredible job on YouTube outlining everything, and she has a great YouTube channel, Lauren, the mortician. I don't know why I can't speak right now, Lauren, but I want to thank you for joining the show today. We're excited to have you on. You know, so many people are watching the footage. They're looking from different angles. They're watching footage that isn't that clear, and so they have more questions than answers. So it's great to have you here to discuss that. I wanted to talk about the first thing, and I think this is really important. So many people thought it was quite strange that the bullet that was used to kill Kirk did not exit his body, and in fact his producer detailing the details about how it was lodged into his body and how it actually saved lives. So they think that's a little bit on the questionable side of all of this, but you would know better than anyone else. Is that strange?
So not necessarily. It really depends on the caliber of the weapon, the distance, and what part of the body that it entered. I've worked on a lot of gunshot victims where the bullet stayed inside the body. That is actually quite common. Soft tissue, bone, or thick muscle can slow or trap a bullet, I think, easier than the general public realizes. So while it might raise some questions, concerns, it's not automatically suspicious or abnormal. Ballistics are incredibly unpredictable. I've seen people take their own life with a weapon in the head, and you think that there's no way that it could be an open casket, and yet somehow it ends up workable. So really nothing about ballistics surprises me anymore.
Yeah, no, that's interesting to hear. And, you know, we have people who are watching the footage, and a lot of them say that it looks like it appears that Kirk was shot from behind and that it wasn't a bullet that entered through the front of his neck. What's your reaction to that as well? Because, you know, we're slowing the video down. And I don't want to play it right now because I know it's early morning for folks, but it does appear to look a little strange, but I'm no expert. You are, though.
Without seeing the official autopsy or trajectory report, it is literally impossible to say for sure. What I can say is that what's visible on video doesn't always match internal evidence. Mm-hmm. So bodies move when they're struck, muscles contract, and even camera angles can be misleading. And that's why investigators rely on those autopsy trajectory analysis, not necessarily just the visuals. So
yeah, no, that makes sense. And talking about the autopsy, can you walk us through the process a little bit? Because obviously there's a ton of camera footage that has circulated online. So they have that they're going to be watching, I believe I understand from your video. But what else would have happened during the autopsy of Charlie Kirk?
The first step is they do an external examination. So they're going to examine his body from head to toe. Then a lot of people, I got questions about metal detectors. There's not necessarily a metal detector. There's not an MRI machine because we don't know what other metals are on or in the body, but they will do x-rays. So I have seen a lot of back and forth on if the bullet was extracted at the hospital, was it extracted during the autopsy? Either way, the medical examiner, if it was at the hospital, they would have collected it as evidence. If it was still inside of his neck, they would have done that as a part of the autopsy. I hope that they would, it's so hard to say for sure when you're not there, but I hope that they would have done a very thorough exam in the neck along with the bullet path trajectories. This is a murder investigation, so they're going to need all of that in court.
And when it comes to the state of Utah, help us understand how autopsies work, because I know you've read in on all of this, and so you have kind of an understanding as to how long it might take for the public to see the results of that autopsy.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with autopsy results and waiting on those results, because for death certificates, we don't get death certificates at the funeral home until those have been finalized by the doctor, the medical examiner team. So the problem with Utah is that Utah does not make autopsy reports generally available to the public. They're kept private. So that's really unfortunate in a case like this. I think that's a very weird coincidence that in the state of Utah, they don't require us. They just say no. So what information we're going to get that's going to be available to us is going to be during the trial, during the court case, or if Turning Point USA steps up and says, hey, you guys, this is what was found. However, they've been pretty quiet so far, so I'm not holding my breath for that. Typically, we can have results from an autopsy, four to six, 8 weeks. But in a high profile case like this, it could take longer or it could be sooner. And I know that doesn't give very good answer. It just depends on how the Utah Medical Examiner's Office that performed the autopsy, how they prioritize the case.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to wait to see how that all unravels. I think it's probably going to, we're probably going to wait till the criminal trial begins for that. But I also wanted to ask you, because there's been several high profile assassinations over the years in terms of public trust. What do you make that we could all kind of draw from that? Because again, most people don't trust the government when it comes to this, but the photos a lot of the times or the videos don't add up. So what can we as the American people kind of draw from the conclusion of previous assassinations and how we could even trust our government?
Historically, when the public doesn't see transparent, timely information, whether it's JFK, MLK, or more modern cases, it fuels speculation. People want answers faster than the system provides them. But autopsies, toxicology, and legal reviews, they take time, unfortunately. So the gap between the event and the evidence is where those conspiracy theories like to grow. I think public trust comes from consistency and transparency, which we haven't had a whole lot of so far. The science has to speak louder than the headlines. So I am really hoping that they release something to us.
Yeah. I mean, we need to know more about this. And I think it's okay for people to ask questions. And I think
absolutely.
Yeah. Like if you have anything to add to that.
Absolutely. When we take a death that was so public as Charlie Kirk's, and we're just going to take it, shove it off to the side, put a curtain in front of it and say, oh, this is what happened. No, not anymore. This is 2025. People want to know. We're curious. We want justice. We want answers. And that is a normal reaction. People, we don't just shove death to the side anymore. We want answers, and transparency is the key to stopping the conspiracies or confirming them.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that really is key. And we want to thank you for joining us today, because you help us understand, you help me understand it a little bit more. And I know we've got a ton of questions, and we'll bring you back on when or if the autopsy is released. I think we'll have to know about that soon. I don't think they're going to get away with hiding any of the information, in regards to this. So Lauren, the mortician, I can't speak this morning. Thank you for joining me. We greatly appreciate it. Again, head on over to her YouTube page, because she did a great job at breaking all of this down for us. Lauren, the mortician, is where you're going to find her on YouTube. Thank you for joining us today, Lauren. We appreciate it. All right, guys. So there's still a lot going on around the world. Let's dive into some more stories, because this was a very funny video. We're going to play clip 10 for you, because there's a woman running for governor in California, Katie Porter. And ultimately, she was caught flipping out. I want to play the clip for you first, and then I'll give you my reaction on the other side. Take a listen.
So I'm on the oversight committee, you might know, and that is where we did a study recently this fall in September, and what it showed is if we don't electrify our transportation sector, that we're going to lose more than 500,000 Californians dying prematurely to air pollution and other problems, and the state could lose four. Get out of my shot.
I wanted to tell you that that's actually incorrect. It's not that it's electric vehicles. It's that if we don't meet the commitments under the Paris Climate Accord.
Okay. It does. Okay. You also were in my shot before that. Stay out of my shot. Okay. I'm going to start again with electric vehicles saving us money.
All right. So, you know, we've all had our bad days. We've all had our bad days, of course. I will not judge. Yeah, she's a little biatchy, but, you know, when I'm hungry, I kind of snap. And so it's always why I carry a snack in my bag these days, because I don't want to get caught on a moment like that on cam. All right, folks, I actually just wanted to bring you some breaking news. It looks like President Trump is talking about J6 on his Truth Social page. I literally just got the notification, so I'm going to turn to that now. To all the FBI agents who were forced by Christopher Wray to go to the Capitol on the afternoon of January the 6th, and then risk their careers to blow the whistle about the political bias and abuse they witnessed, I want to thank you for your courage and ensure that you now work for Director Kash Patel and Attorney General Pam Bondi, who are, again, let me just zoom in on this, as I was rushing to grab this. I was like, this is crazy. Hold on one second. He's ultimately going out there and saying that, again, they're looking to stamp out the political bias from the Bureau and DOJ to make sure that agents pursue criminals who, without regard to their political stripes, just the evidence. Again, so he's actually, it sounds like, calling for more whistleblowers to come forward. And again, I just got the notification that this dropped. So I was like, let's turn into this real quick because it sounded good. Obviously, President Trump now calling out those who, Christopher Wray, who decided to weaponize the agency, the FBI, to go after those that they disagreed with politically. But again, I mean, this is pretty big. I think this is his way of encouraging other whistleblowers to come forward. Now, unfortunately, and this is where I'm going to give you my criticism on all of this, it sounds good. It sounds very good. But the reality is President Trump is requesting for whistleblowers to come forward, it sounds like. But they haven't treated the current FBI whistleblowers well, according to those. And I can't talk to them anymore because technically they're supposed to be employees and they're not supposed to talk to media. But I haven't heard about FBI whistleblower Steve Front or Vera Boyle getting their jobs back. And so before we call on others to come forward and risk their jobs, we probably should make sure that those who have done just that are made right, that they're made right. And unfortunately, I don't think that's the case. So although I appreciate this post, I got to say, got to be fair and balanced here, I don't think President Trump, I think he should be asking some simple questions as to, have the former FBI agents who came forward, have they been justified? Have they been given what's been due to them? Again, the FBI and DOJ came to an agreement with these whistleblowers, but I have not yet heard if they've been paid out, if they've been shipped off to their new roles. We don't know any of that. So I agree with President Trump. Absolutely. If you work for the FBI and you know they were intentionally trying to set up J6ers, let's hear from you. Let's hear from you. So that's big news coming from the president as I frantically jumped over there. You know, I love a good J6 story. And whenever I see the J6 thing come over the line, I was like, that's a good one. So we'll continue to follow it as it develops. But again, that's a very, very big one. A very, very big one. I want to turn to a clip because former Congressman Matt Gaetz in clip 11 is airing out AIPAC. And I think it's interesting because he's kind of walking the American people through the corruption related to AIPAC, and these are his allegations. Take a listen.
Initially, I resented the fact that there was no appreciation for nuance. Like, if you asked any questions about any decision of the Israeli government in any place regarding settlements, regarding Gaza, whatever, you were like, you had deviated from the script. And I just, in any policy area, I had resentment over that. And then I saw the way the AIPAC worked, and that was weird for like a country lawyer like me. I remember my first AIPAC reception, and like your fundraiser tells you you have to go, and your chief of staff tells you you have to go, your committee chairman all tell you you have to go, and you get there and you wear this name badge, and I remember there's a QR code on it. And what we were supposed to do was go talk to donors, and then if they liked you, they scanned your QR code to make a donation, like on the spot. And so this, can you just imagine how demoralizing that is to like be told that your job for the next several hours to go chat people up, hoping they would scan you like a can of tomato soup on the way out of the meeting.
I mean, it's literally purchasing.
Right. And so I saw that and I was like, wow, that is so freaking weird. And then, you know, I was in Israel. I went multiple times and I did not like the fact that I found someone in my room rooting around in my stuff that should not have been there at the King David Hotel when I came back to my room when, no one was expecting me to be back in my room.
And I just Israeli law enforcement.
Well, I don't know who it was. I just thought like, this is weird. All of these things combined are odd. And then the policy outgrowth seems to be an obsession about the Middle East that has not served my generation well. I just don't.
You know, I really appreciate this and I really like this. I find the fact that they have allowed this and this has become normal in Congress to be disturbing, but, pushing back and exposing all of this is what's going to end it. You see, I think most Americans, regardless of what your views are, would say that's actually a massive, massive issue that needs to be dealt with. You see, our politicians, we say it all the time, they're paid off, they're bought off, but the fact they're literally scanning them is quite strange. It's quite strange. You know, AIPAC and the ADL, all of it needs to come to an end. All of it needs to come to an end. The American people have had enough about all of this. We've had enough of watching it. It's what's leading to so much corruption within our government. AIPAC denying these allegations that Matt Gaetz made, though. The accusations about our fundraisers is, of course, a lie. Barcodes are on a name badge for security reasons, not fundraising, and are scanned for that purpose. That'd be pretty easy to prove or disprove, one would say. So hopefully Matt could show us some of that. But that's fascinating, right? Because we see it all the time. And again, it's not just AIPAC. It's literally all these lobbyists. You got to purge the lobbyists. You just got to get them out. Get them out. But nobody wants to do that, especially because it's really corrupt. The ways that I've listened before on how people get committee assignments, and you're just like, you have to literally buy your way to the committee assignments, donate. This is why our country is in such a bad, bad place right now. Matt Gaetz responding, you guys are the best. Are you actually denying that donors scan people's name tags to get their donation information? And actually, I prefer when no one talks to me. Interesting. Just a play out over time. Maybe we'll reach out to Matt and have him want to talk about this at length. All right, I want to turn to another story because I'm, you know, scrolling through citizenfreepress.com this morning, which I actually always do. They have a great platform. They actually featured our interview yesterday with Mr. Tommy Tuberville, and so we're very thankful for that. But it looks like they've linked to a very important story, and that is that Elon Musk is looking to buy up real estate throughout the great state of Texas. Tesla, SpaceX, both confirmed to have moved from California to Texas back in 2020, but specifically they're mapping out how much land Musk and his companies have purchased. Musk companies own more than 500 properties covering 6,000 acres in Texas. That's great. I like that. Now here's the big part. Remember when it was so like controversial when he had picked up and left California, came to Texas. The only thing that my controversy on that, like the only thing I was like, that's a little, is I really, as a New Yorker, I hate it when people from blue states, blue cities come and relocate because you really hope that they don't bring their politics with them. And they do. I mean, the city of Austin is proof of just that. All these big tech companies, and when they come here, they don't change their views. And that's a problem. That's a massive, massive issue. And it's one worth discussing. I joke all the time when I used to tell people we're looking to move to Florida. I used to say, all right, like we need to check voter registrations. independent Republican only, require them to take some type of test. So we can't just have them all in. And actually things have gone well in Florida. It actually hasn't hurt Florida. It's actually, it significantly helped Florida, especially in the Miami area too, which you didn't think when you saw all of these New York businesses who were closing shop in New York and coming down to Florida, Miami specifically. I was getting a little nervous, but it's going well for Florida. Texas, not so much. Not so much. I know more people think, like, when they hear about all this, they're like, oh, it's a red state. But if you actually come here and you look around, city of Austin and others, it's drastically changing. Drastically changing. Folks, I want to remind you all right now over at thealexjonesstore.com that's, we've got a whole bunch of great items right now for you all to indulge in. Most importantly, it helps us with our very next operation that we're looking to launch. So head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. Support us. Keep us up and running. We've got a lot that we're working on, of course. And we greatly appreciate it when you do so. We also have, as you could see, an incredible sale going on right now. 50% off sea moss gummies, which are incredible, as well as $20 teas. They're actually $19.97. Price tag for those. So give it a look. Head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. Now is a great time to support our work because we are trying and we are fighting and we are trying our best to stay in this race. Many of you know there's very few companies, very few outlets that will bring you the truth. They're all afraid of it. That's why they're trying to shut us down. But with your support, we stay up and running and we're very grateful for that. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. And then I look over right now on gbnews.com. And they've actually got a massive exclusive in regards to how our friends across the pond are just completely being ambushed by illegal aliens who are flooding their country. Their country is gone. Their country is lost. But GBN News is now reporting exclusively that there were 35,000 small boat migrants who have now crossed over from the English Channel into their country so far this year, which obviously is a very alarming number. So 35,000 migrants have illegally crossed into the UK. And it's pretty insane. GB News also exclusively reporting that at least 750 migrants made the crossing from France into their country. Again, the numbers are pretty staggering. And they don't want you to look at this information. They don't want you to look the other way on this. Because they have been invading the UK, completely destroying the country. You know, we talked about it with Father Calvin Robinson just a few hours ago. And it's devastating to see. But I mean, they're literally outlining the invasion here for you. So far, since last week, 2,000, it looks like, migrants arrived in just several days. It's so heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking. And those who do speak up on the issue, they get locked into prison cells, tossed away. It's pretty insane. And, you know, it's only 2,000, but it looks like due to poor weather that there possibly could have been more. I don't know where you go from here in the UK right now. I don't know where you go. Is it too late? Is the UK salvageable? I don't know. We're going to continue to follow it, though, because that's our future if we don't get aggressive on this front. All right, folks, that does it for this edition of The American Journal. I'm excited that you were all here with us. But don't go anywhere because Alex Jones is up next and he has an incredible show lined up for you as always. So you're not going to want to miss out on that. So hang tight. Alex is next.
Feel the unstoppable power of Alex Jones, fueled by Ultimate Creatine Powder. This is the secret weapon behind his relentless energy. Creatine monohydrate ignites his muscles, blasting through lefts and sprints with raw warrior strength, building the physique of a true patriot. With micronized mixability Alex dominates every day, recovering like a titan to crush fatigue and soar to new heights of performance. His mind becomes a fortress, sharper focus, unbreakable memory, powered by creatine to outlast any mental battle. This nootropic powerhouse defends against fatigue, keeping Alex Jones razor sharp for the fight. Join him and unleash your inner strength. Grab Ultimate Creatine Powder now at the alexjonesstore.com. Fuel your fight and rise with Alex Jones today.
That's pure gold. I'd have in between, like, maybe the creatine zooming in a little. It's coming towards you. But also, since there's 30 seconds left, you'd have me go, baka chaka woom bak, quack, 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 whatever it is. You know, that little, ooga chaka, monka, baka, woom, cock, cock. That'd be really good.